Welcome to the Laura Lee Show on tape. The following is my conversation with Val Valerian on the fourth dimension. This took place on radio station KVI Seattle on October 3, 1992. News and commercials have been edited out. Val Valerian is the author of Matrix 1, subtitled Understanding Aspects of Covert Interaction with Alien Culture, Technology, and Planetary Power Structures, and of Matrix 2, subtitled The Abduction and Manipulation of Humans Using Advanced Technology, and of Matrix 3, subtitled The Psychosocial, Chemical, Biological, and Electronic Manipulation of Human Consciousness. Val also publishes a monthly newsletter entitled Leading Edge. You can write to Val Valerian at the Leading Edge Research at P.O. Box 481 in Yelm, Y-E-L-M, Yelm, Washington, 98597. And if you'd like the complete catalog of the Laura Lee Show on tape, write to P.O. Box 3010 in Bellevue, Washington, 98009, or call area code 206-781-4473. Now, here's Val Valerian. Valerian is our next guest. He's the author of three interesting books, Matrix 1, 2, and just out Matrix 3. Val has had... Welcome, Val. Thanks for joining us.
Greetings.
You've had such an interesting background in life thus far. Could you tell us a little bit about it and what you've been doing and how you managed to get into the fields in which you find yourself these days?
Well, basically... I've been kind of, ever since I was very small, I've kind of observed that things changed, but they stayed the same, and everything around me seemed to be kind of hypocritical in nature, and I've always had a curiosity about wondering why what's happening is happening, and I spent 18 months in Southeast Asia, in 1970 as a combat photographer, and I saw a lot of interesting things over there. I saw some flying discs at rather close range with the U.S. military getting out of them. I saw some really interesting devices in use over there.
Such as? Besides disc with army men coming out?
A device... I saw the Army using this device. It was kind of a small rectangular box, probably about a foot wide and about 3 feet long, and they set it down in this field in this black opaque curtain about 500 feet long, just rose, you know, from the box and kind of obscured a complete area. It was like an electronic smokescreen or whatever it was. It was something I'd never seen before, and this was, you know, back in 1970. And a lot of other strange stuff, you know, went on over there. So
this naturally piqued your curiosity.
Well, yeah. And after a number of years, I ended up going down to Tampa, Florida, where, you know, I was in the Air Force. I was a civil engineering assistant, a draftsman, surveyor, and site developer, and I went to England in 1980, and that was about the time Bentwaters incident happened over there.
Is that a UFO incident?
Yeah, it's an incident that happened at the Bentwaters Air Force Base. It's the incident that basically got John Lear's attention when he ran into several people that were involved with that. And I spent 4 years over there, shuttling back and forth between England and Belgium. And in 1984, I found myself in Nevada, and things started coming to a head. So after about 3 years, I gathered all the most interesting material I could locate together, and I put it in a paper and brought it over to John's house, because at that time I was...
John Lear?
Yes, mm-hmm. And I was a section director for MUFON at the time. And... I said, here, I'll take a look at this. And he thought it was pretty neat, and he sent out 10 copies, you know, to some of the people that he knew. And I titled it The Krill Papers, and eventually Arcturus Book Service got a hold of a copy and called me up and said, well, this is pretty neat, why don't you clean it up? And so I did. I cleaned it up and got carried away, and I wrote a 381-page book, which was the first Matrix book.
Why did you title it Matrix? How are you using it?
Matrix is kind of a multi-hierarchical network of events. The first Matrix was called Understanding Aspects of Covert Interaction with Alien Culture, Technology, and Planetary Power Structures. I guess after being in England for about 4 years, I believe in calling Rose a Rose as far as the title, and it seems like all my subtitles require extreme in-breath before pronouncing them.
Well, you cover a lot of territory.
Yeah.
You take big bites to chew off, don't you?
Yeah. So I began working with researchers worldwide after a while, and I kind of started a group called Nevada Aerial Research Group. And so this was like 1988 and 89 when I functioned as Nevada State Section Director for MUFON, and then after a while I realized that MUFON was kind of loaded with ex-government military people, and I ran into several cases where they deliberately obscured data and everything else. So that's enough of this.
On the higher, middle, lower levels of MUFON, or?
On the higher levels of MUFON.
Hmm.
And then I was appointed interim director for UFO Contacts International until I started bringing out evidence of negative, or what they perceived as negative occurrences relative to what was happening to people, and they were stuck in basically Space Brothers and Flowers type mindsets. They said, well, we don't need you in here. So and I was also a member of the APRO and the U.S. Speleological Association. That's
not
caving.
Familiar with those.
Caving.
Oh, caving. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
A lot of stuff happens underground. So then I
write that down and have to ask you about that later.
So then I just kind of started stuff was coming in all the time, and I started putting a newsletter out called the Nevada Aerial Research Newsletter. And then in April 91, in February 91, I came up here to Washington to lecture at Evergreen State College, and this is pretty neat. It's not desert. There's it's plant life in the air, fog, and everywhere is a million miles from nowhere, but it's a lot better than the desert where I'd spent 7 years. It's almost pseudo-biblical, being out there. So I moved up here in April and changed the name of the research network to Leading Edge Research Group.
Aptly named.
Which now has a network which spans about 40 states and 17 foreign countries. So the newsletter, the Leading Edge, is about 100 pages now. So during all this time, relative to human-alien interaction and human-government interaction in the abduction area, I've probably worked with about 900 people since the very beginning. And
900 people who have sighted or had alien interaction or contact?
Who have had interaction with government. Very often interaction with different types of species occur where there are humans present. U.S. government, U.S. military, German military. This is quite happening, quite often enough to be significant.
What is the significance?
Well, there's an upper level collusion going on. I mean, these military are wearing black uniforms with a red triangle with a dragon on it, just like the ETs that are on board there.
And you've actually seen human military in these alien uniforms?
I've seen this kind of thing go on, but not on board the ship. I've seen things like people in mixed groups like that get out of ships from a distance of 300 or 400 feet. But this kind of theme is very consistent and running through a lot of people that I've worked with.
So you've heard this story over and over again?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so in 1989, I knew a lot of people that were involved with this as well. So in 1989, I put Matrix 2 together, which was subtitled The Abduction and Manipulation of Humans Using Advanced Technology. And in 1990, that was released, and that was updated to 660 pages in 1991. It's probably the most detailed work ever published. It's the best book on the planet relative to that subject.
Of alien abductions,
right.
And
so in the intervening time, I sort of turned inward and discovered that, you know, I was the greatest mystery of them all. You know, who am I? I mean, what am I doing here? And so on and so forth. And I locked into all that and went through a lot of training and different kinds of disciplines and remote viewing and a lot of other things. And finally, in preparation for election in Los Angeles, where I went down there and was a keynote speaker down at the UFO Expo West, in writing the in preparation for my lecture down there, I got carried away again and wrote a 913-page book.
These are exponentially growing.
It seems like that.
Yeah.
Called Matrix 3, which is the psychosocial, chemical, biological, and electronic manipulation of human consciousness. So I guess all... Since 1988, we've made, between the books and Leading Edge, we've made probably about 4,000 pages of material available to world researchers worldwide, which is more than any, you know, anybody else has done that I know. And I've got a degree in civil engineering and psychology, and that's really it in a nutshell. But we get stuff in all the time, and I do a lot of out-of-the-body travel and
did you do that for the purpose of research or saying, oh, gee, you know, what's going on in some of these mysterious places that I can't get to physically? I'll just go there out of body or do remote viewing. Is it for the purpose of research?
Oh, yes.
Okay, let's hear when we come back. Let's hear about We need to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue our talk with Val Valerian and see what kinds of research he's done and get to some specifics on this. Can be some interesting hours spent here tonight. I wanted to have you tell us how you have used remote viewing and out-of-body experiences to do some research into your field. I've often been wondering why more people don't do that. I'm quite intrigued that that you've been doing some of that.
Well, it's you really have to use every method at your disposal, and all these different methods are easily verifiable relative to, you know, going someplace and then going there, getting back in a body and dragging the body over there and looking through your eyes, and that's there, and going through the whole nine yards.
What's the theory behind it, as you understand it, that makes that possible?
That makes what possible?
Remote viewing.
Well, everything's connected into, in certain terms, of the morphological field. Everything's connected together, and when you...
Gee, our last guest was saying just that.
Indeed. When you lock into it, you can pick anything up. If you just give thought to it. It's one of these just do it things. It's not hard to do. I was sitting down one day, for example, and my mind turned to George Bush, as it very often does, and I saw him eating breakfast, which I found was kind of odd because of the time of day, until I realized he was in Spain at the time, and then it made more sense. You know, this is one of the government's big things that they've been discussing, especially through...
What, remote viewing?
Oh, yeah. The PsyCorp and all that, and the PsyTech organization, and General Stubblebine, and all the rest of it. You know, and it's come out a lot through a lot of research, especially in conjunction with Montauk stuff and...
Which is the Tesla Philadelphia experiment, the Montauk
stuff?
Okay.
There's more about the Montauk stuff and everything else in Matrix 3 collectively than any other book in existence.
We've talked a lot about Tesla and the Philadelphia experiment with various guests. I'd like to get your version of it as well.
Of the Philadelphia experiment?
Sure, a few comments on it. You know, actually what I'd like to get is... go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, it just seems to me that there is a whole interconnectedness to a lot of the phenomenon and UFO events and sort of what's going on. And maybe we have time for the big picture that you'd like to begin with.
The big picture?
No, kind of a chronological, historical...
Well, I think to really go to understand what the the Montauk experiment really means. You really have to go back 60,000 years and perhaps even a million years. You'll read in all the information that's in Matrix 3 and what Al Bielek and Preston Nichols have published, that in their time, conversion equipment that they had in Arizona, the time machine that they have, and the other experiments they did out in Long Island, they couldn't look beyond 2012 AD, and they couldn't look beyond a million years ago. And they thought, well, it's a closed loop. Well, it is in a certain sense. But there's a lot behind that, why they can't do that, that they have never brought out, and that I know Drumvalo's talked to Preston about it, and it just doesn't seem to sink in.
Drumvalo's been on this show, too.
Yes, he's quite a nice gentleman. But it has to do with something called the Merkaba. And it has to do with Mars. And it has to do with Atlantis, you know, which seems like kind of far-fetched connections with the Montauk experiment. And it has to do with Grays.
All those wonderful taboo topics.
Yes, indeed. So it is, it's quite complicated. Basically, you could define the Merkaba as a living field, okay, generated from a living being, from a body using emotion and love. And it involves spinning.
Sort of a manifestation of the implicate order,
yes,
I would say.
Okay. Exactly. It involves taking the tetrahedral fields around the body, one of which is phase locked to the physical, and spinning them. And what this creates is a disc-shaped field that goes out about 55 feet around the body. If you spin this fast enough, you change your basic wavelength of your body operates and everything else, and from a third-dimensional view, you disappear. Now, this is the basic field of creation.
Now, which is the basic field? This living field? Okay.
Yes. Now, if you create this field externally, okay, mechanically, you can do that. You don't need love to do that. You just need intellect to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to, you really go back 60, 70,000 years ago, after Lemuria came up. Lemuria actually was starting to sink, actually, when it was... the existence of Lemuria is pretty well established because of two main reasons. One being that coral only grows to about 150 feet below the ocean, and there's numerous coral rings all stretched over the Pacific from Easter Island to Hawaii, and the coral runs 1,800 feet deep.
Which means that coral was once only 150 feet below the surface,
right.
So that land sank. Okay.
And all the flora and fauna and bugs and insects and bacteria on all these islands are all the same.
Right.
And there's a lot of reference and a lot of creation stories relative to that. And what happened was that when Lemuria, which was off in the Pacific, was in its final stages of sinking, Atlantis came up, and they went to Atlantis, the island of Atlantis, and Atlantis consisted of about 10 islands, one main island, one to the north, one to the south, and about six to the west, which just happens to be more or less where the Florida Keys are, but that area was actually underwater at the time, the general area of the southern United States. And the northern island was called Udall. And what they did is they projected out the tree of life over the main island in 10 different vortexes or vortices. And what this did was that basically in each one of these vortices had a different nature to it. And what it did basically was attract the people from all over the planet, especially the people that were in Lemuria, which basically had a core group of 1,000 immortal beings, and I'll explain about that later, to these areas. And and people went to the area which was their greatest, in resonance with them. But there were two areas that were not of the nature of anybody there. And those vortices just continued to spin. And they attracted two extraterrestrial races, one being the Hebrews, and nobody's quite sure where they came from. And the other was the Martians.
So these Hebrews are relating to the Hebrews that we know from...
Yes, okay. And another race was a race from Mars, which was very, very old.
And which left behind Hoagland's face on Mars and all this.
Yes, and the mathematical layout of the Cydonia complex is according to the Fibonacci spiral.
Fibonacci spiral?
Yeah, and the fiber and the mathematical layout describes exactly how they created the Merkaba. They created it using that facility. So what happened was, at that particular point in time, we have to go back a million years ago, when Mars was more or less like Earth, and they were a left-brained, male-oriented planet, always warring with each other. And just
so the astrologers got the planet of war right, didn't they?
Right.
Okay.
And so just before the atmosphere blew off, they did an experiment, built an external Merkaba. Now, this has been referred to by some sources as the Lucifer Rebellion because it involves externalization of the Merkaba.
Mm-hmm.
And so they built a time-space vehicle and got in it. And here they went along through time and space, and they looked ahead in the future, and there was this vortex. So they went into it. So they traveled through time and space and went into this vortex. Now at the time, the people on Earth at that point, which consisted of some alien entities, very tall ones. They had 46 plus 2 chromosomes. Humans have 44 plus 2.
Are the skeletons of 7 and 8 and such
feet
people that we taught?
12 to 14 feet.
Uh-huh, okay.
So...
And these aliens were independent from the
the
other groups. Okay.
And so the consciousness at that time was equivalent to a 12-year-old girl, because the planetary consciousness was female, right brain, very intuitive, very psychic. The Martian equivalent was male oriented, left brained, and equivalent to a 65-year-old man. And in essence, they raped us. They said, you know, you're ours. But there weren't enough of them. There were only 1,000, 1,200 of them.
Of who?
Of the race that came from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically said, well, we'll try your feminine way. And they did for about 50,000 years. And during this time, we have to look at what's called the precession of the equinox. Mm-hmm. Every 26,000 years, there's a shift in consciousness and a corresponding planetary axis shift. They're always synonymous. Every time there's a shift in consciousness, there's a shift in the axis.
And we're talking about a pole shift?
Yes.
Okay.
And there was a small shift at that particular time. In fact, it's about 126,000 cycle back. And a piece of Atlantis fell off, and it just happened to be the part where the Martians were. They were kind of aggravated about that. And later on, and so there was kind of a general fear that went around Atlantis for a couple hundred years, because they remembered what went on with Lemuria.
Sinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they were worried about, you know, maybe something would happen there, because the reason why they were worried about it is because of the influence of the race from Mars. They were becoming more logical, more left brain, and they were losing their psychic intuitive abilities. And then
why?
Later, well, because of the influence of the Martian race.
Oh, okay.
And so later on, so many, I've got to look up something here, so many years later, about 16,000 years ago, an asteroid hit the Earth just about where Charleston, South Carolina is. And this can be backed up by any kind of geological records that you want to look at.
Oh, sure. I'm reading about all the different craters left behind by various asteroids that you're finding.
This covered four states. The equipment, of course, that was underwater at the time. And they saw this coming because they were a very advanced society by this time.
They could peer into the future.
Right. They were more advanced than this civilization is now. And the race from Mars, that aspect of it, wanted to blow it out of the sky. You notice the parallel to what's going on now with all this asteroid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People want to join AA, Atlantean Amnesiacs or something. they wanted to blow it out of the sky, and the feminine half won over, and they had kind of a Dallas philosophy, you know, of let it happen, you know. And so it did, and a big chunk of Atlantis fell into the sea, and just about the whole area where the Martians occupied. And so what they did is they basically said, you know, this is enough. We're not going to listen to you anymore. We're going to do our own thing. And they began to create another Merkaba experiment. This is the one that went haywire, and it opened dimensional warps and pulled in billions of entities from other dimensional levels, and billions of entities went into the bodies of the Atlanteans. And they're still here. In fact, I was talking to a researcher not too long ago, in fact, in February, by the name of David Herman, who had been doing some interesting research which parallels this. And of course, if people work with people who are psychotherapists and whatnot, they're familiar with the idea of entities being in other entities. So today, very many people have four or five entities that are within them. Now, if you can contain these in a octahedral field and hook it to their dimension, they look at it like the light of day, and they just go away. In essence, by the race from Mars doing this, they brought the Lucifer Rebellion to Earth. And that's where things really went crazy. And so Atlantis sank.
How does the continent sink? I mean, what was it, mountains in the first place? I mean, the whole thing just goes depressed? You know, the sea floor just was up and then it was down?
How does it work? Well, it sunk because of the turmoil caused by that Merkaba experiment going wrong. They lost control of it. And it ripped open, it's like ripping open your stomach lining. It ripped open dimensional space in that point. They had a very advanced crystal technology at that time. The Lemurian technology was more psychotronic in origin. Lemurian technology involves things where your mind and your heart and your emotions connect with whatever the equipment is. Lemurian technology looks more like artwork than it does equipment.
Right. I was just in Maine recently, and they have that desert in Maine and a lot of places where you scratch off the topsoil and it's all sand.
Yes.
And so I'm just sitting there trying to visualize, you know, what was this, the shore of some sea, you know, long ago?
Sure.
In a bigger, I mean, geography changes. It's kind of fascinating to track the history of certain pieces of geography.
So the Grays got involved in this somehow, and everybody's sort of aware of the experiment that was done in 1943 and 1983, and they're separated by multiples of 20-year cycles, which is the basic cycle of the Earth. And you'll notice that also falls on 2012.
What's the purpose for the 20-year cycle? What is it? What cycle were they following?
Well, it's a cycle that occurs around August 20th every 20 years. It's just it's a cycle of the planet.
Well, sort of the harmonic convergence was around
the
time, wasn't it?
In its own way, yes.
Uh-huh.
But it involves the planetary mind, as it were, and the planet controlling the body near the Earth as a crystalline structure. We're still learning more about that. But apparently there was also so what the Montauk experiment was in essence creating an external Merkaba. The Grays were involved with it, and it wasn't just to make a ship disappear. So there was an experiment in 1913, 1943, 1983, and there will be another one around 2012. Okay? And this is why they couldn't look beyond 2012.
Because of this experiment?
And they couldn't look beyond a million years ago because they were all connected. There are other things to do with 2012, too, but the fact that we're going into another dimensional octave. When people, things have changed a lot. Usually when people die, as they term it, when they go out of their body for the last time. And I would advise, if people are interested in that, two good books are Journey Out of the Body by Robert Monroe and Far Journeys, especially the second half of Far Journeys. It gives you really an interesting view on a lot of things.
We've had Bob Monroe on, okay.
So when they, you have to understand that this whole universe functions on one wavelength, not frequency. Frequency is the number of vibrations.
Cycles.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But a wavelength, 7.23 centimeters. Everything from the macrocosm down to the microcosm. Okay?
That's in this three-dimensional reality. And if we go to the next dimension, it's going to have some other wavelength.
There are 12 dimensions, each with 12 overtones. Uh-huh. Okay? The grays, how they've come in here, is they are sitting one and two overtones above this one. So they're basically invisible to this wavelength. That's why we can't see a lot of their stuff. The skies are crowded one and two overtones above this one. When people, when people die normally, they go out of their body, they go to about the fourth dimension, between a third and a sixth overtone, and recycle back. Well, that's all over.
What do you mean that's all over?
Well, because we are approaching the 26,000-year point in the procession. And
there's
a major octave change here. Everybody is going. There's no more of this recycling stuff going to happen. As I was explaining to people before, and within about 10 years or so, 10 or 12 years, most people who are relatively calm and centered will be sitting on some grassy knoll someplace eating an orange they just thought of.
So we're taking a major leap in consciousness.
Yes. So people talk about ascension and resurrection and all this other kind of stuff.
Just sort of getting an intuitive message on this?
I think so. Ascension basically is going through this dimensional shift and going through it in your body with your eyes open, essentially, fully conscious. And resurrection is, you know, the body dies, you go out of it and you go there anyway. Or you fall asleep. You're going to get there anyway, but it depends on your state, because if you're really a fear-bound individual in the first place, and you go to a situation which will be about the fourth dimension between the 10th and 12th overtones, where what you think you get, and you're a very chaotic individual, well, you're going to have fear, and then you're going to think of something, and you're going to look at it and say, well, if I had a gun, and you notice a gun there, and you go, in other words, the people will get there, but they won't necessarily stay there. They'll resonate to another wavelength. But this...
Oh, and settle out to a place of comfort, right, that resonates with wherever you're...
Right, so the chaff will weed themselves out, as it were, in that way. Now, there are many different dimensions that, as you know, that coexist simultaneously, but they're on different wavelengths. So there is a fourth-dimensional Earth coexisting here at this same time, and it's already there, and it's beautiful. I've been there.
How did you go there?
Well, that's kind of a long story.
Do you want to finish this one first, and then you can tell us that one?
It basically involves spinning your fields and going there, and I've seen it on out-of-the-body things, too, and it's basically the same as here, but it's the colors are a lot more vibrant, but, you know, it takes about 2 years to get used to the idea that, you know, what you think kind of comes into being. And it takes a couple of years to get used to that, but I think people will generally be pleased. That's why, you know, having written all this stuff about the government, the drugs, and the electronic mind manipulation, all these books about manipulation, when you start to look at consciousness itself, consciousness is the name of the game everywhere in the universe. So I'd kind of say, well, I've done all this stuff on the socio-cultural level and the level with the government and politics and all this stuff. Now it's a chance to say, well, you know, there is other stuff that's involved with this. And I did that, in fact, up at the Disaster Preparedness Expo, which some people refer as Fear, Pain, and Victimhood Expo. And so I talked about this, and my son was up there, and he said he was listening to a guy say, in reference to me, he says, this guy's dangerous, you know, he must be a government agent. Because I wouldn't talk about all the other stuff that all the other people were talking about there, about fear, survival, and everything else. But, you know, I did put some slides from Matrix 3 up on the thing, and I gave them something which described the book and everything. So if he bothered to read that, then I don't think he would have fought that. And people just need, you know, you can't really comment on anything at all unless it's in your experience. Otherwise, you know, you're just going on supposition. So a lot
you don't have a reference point with which to understand it?
Okay. Yes, you have to have it in your experience.
We're going to take a break, and we'll come back and continue our conversation with Val Valerian. He's been telling us quite an extraordinary story, and we'll let him continue and explain, I guess you could call it a reconstruction of human history back a million years or so. And this would be including a lot of anomalous and UFO situations, sort of explaining all of that, I guess. Val, what an extraordinary story that you just told us. How did you piece it together from various research, from other people's observations, from looking? It seemed to be a consensus, or how did the story grow? Where did it come from?
Relative to what, to Atlantis and all that?
I guess I'm saying, how did someone here in the late 20th century put together a story that would encompass a lot of history, of which there's a lot of hints, but there wasn't a direct flow? I mean, you had to do some leap of imagination or something.
Well, there's
I mean, you can back it all up, but where did you get the basic storyline?
There's a lot of stuff in historical records, especially ancient Sumerian records. And there's a lot of clues to it in Egypt, too. The problem in Egypt, though, is that of the 2,000 Egyptologists, most of them are Muslims, which is fine.
Oh, right.
But Muslims don't believe that anything existed before 6,000 years ago, so because the Koran is based on that. So
unless you get a few renegade Egyptologists like John Anthony
right.
West. Yeah.
But, I mean, there's been civilizations that have gone back 500 million years on this planet. That's part of the suppression of human awareness, is the suppression of the continuity of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the burning of all the libraries and everything like that is a good example. But they don't want people to know what has happened. There's a lot of lessons to be learned in wisdom and understanding about this whole planet.
I mean, we go
back 500 million years.
I saw an In Search Of episode where they talked about a geode that someone found. They sliced it open, and there was a hexagonal
A spark plug, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, and they took an X-ray of it, and there was this whole device, you know, embedded in this 50-million-year-old rock. Well, how does this come to be, you could ask?
You know who does some really good books is David
Hatshepsut-Childress, mm-hmm.
his Lost Cities series, and very good books. And he has a pretty good grasp on things, but not a complete grasp on some things. He looks at for instance, on one of his books, he has a picture of Queen Nefertiti, and of course, they're all shown with this long, tall hat on, or headpiece on.
Right.
That's because they had an elongated skull. They were Assyrians.
No, this is Nefertiti married to Akhenaten, who
right.
is depicted
they
in pictures.
They were 12 to 14 feet tall. They had 46 yeah. plus 2 chromosomes. They were Syrians. You know, that there are several species of several races from the Syrian system.
Well, could someone go back and take a mummy that was this tall? I mean, maybe they were most of the pharaohs in that era were mummified, and look at the genetic material, and would you find 46 plus 6 chromosomes?
46 plus 2, yes.
Plus 2, okay.
Yeah, this, 42 plus 2 chromosomes do exist here. They're mainly found in some African tribes and some are aborigines. They've already been checked.
We're 44?
44 is most people, and 46 plus 2 is the unity Christ consciousness mode, as it were. And there is a morphological grid for each one of these chromosomes. There's a morphological grid for every species on this planet of everything. It extends from about 60 feet under the ground to about 60 miles out. And there's three grids which suit that DNA structure. And the 46 plus 2 grid was necessary to be established for everybody on the planet to go into Christ consciousness. And that's, you know, that's another thing. But with each particular chromosomal layout, there's also a height variation as well. There's a height
So the more chromosomes, the taller you are, basically.
Well, yes. Specifically, when you're 42 plus 2, the height range is 3.5 to 4.5 feet high.
Now, that would be the grays, then.
Possibly. Of course, that hasn't been checked. But they were originally looked more humanoid than they did, than they do. But, of course, the grays are very left-brained and totally logical. That's why they've been doing all the mutilations all this time and pulling the sexual organs out of cows and all this other thing and mutilating humans and other animals that...
Using cows for genetic material?
Well, some of them do, but primarily they understand the idea of love logically because they're left-brained. Okay, so they're trying to analyze...
They just have trouble experiencing it.
Right, they're trying to analyze the idea of sexual energy and the idea of love, but they're trying to do it logically. They don't have an emotional complex. They're a left-brain species.
They're trying to breed that into themselves?
So they already have. They've had a crossbreeding thing, and it is successful because there is another species, the Esesani, which have traveled... through time, and they are a result of blending with human species. They can't make this jump into the fourth dimension. They can't make this leap that we are all going to make.
Oh, they must be terribly jealous.
Well, so they had no choice but to try to create a genetic blend to put some of themselves through there.
Oh, I see.
So most human beings are 44 plus 2 chromosomes, and that ranges from about 5 to 7.5 feet. 46 plus 2, the height range is around 10 to 16 feet, and here's where you get the Nephilim that Sitchin described.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the Syrian race, which were the long-skulled races, and this is described in all over the world. Everywhere in the world you have depictions and stories and statues of giants and little people, everywhere. And so you also have the Hathor species from Venus, but they don't occupy the third dimension, which is why they aren't detected. There's a lot of simultaneous dimensions going on here. So I mean, you can't, if you use an empirical reductionist technological situation, you're not going to be able to detect them.
If you use three-dimensional lenses to view the world strictly, then you're going to miss a lot.
The most advanced species have no external technology. It's all internal technology.
Well, if they have their consciousness developed to the point, to its utmost, you would think they wouldn't really need technology, consciousness to function.
No, because they can create anything they wish.
Yeah. Actually, we have a phone call from Scott in Burien, and if you have any other phone calls, questions you'd like to pose or comments you'd like to make, 421-5757 is the number. In King County, in Pierce County, that number is 751-5757. In Snohomish County, 348-5757, star KVI for Cellular One phone. Scott in Burien, hi, thanks for joining us on 570 KVI. You're talking with Val Valerian.
Yeah, thank you, Laura Lee.
Sure.
You touched on part of the question I was going to ask. I wanted to know where some of the ancient cultures, mainly... the Egyptians, the Mayans, and the Essene fit into this picture. Also, I heard him, right now I'm studying ceremonial magic, and it's very deep into the Kabbalah, and I heard him talking about the Tree of Life, and I was wondering if he could expand on a lot of that.
There are several distinct possibilities relative to the Mayans and all that, but what we've been able to work out is the Egyptians all originally migrated from Atlantis when it began to sink, and basically there were this core, there still was a core of a number of immortal beings. Now, immortality doesn't mean existence in a body forever. That's a trap. What it means is continuity in consciousness and memory. If you are in Christ consciousness, or in unity consciousness, perhaps is a better word, you can do anything. You can choose when you're going to leave the body. So there was basically, the Egyptian... the Mayan culture and the Egyptian culture were both set up by Thoth, who was one of those immortal beings. In other words, he physically could not go out of the body or die from a third dimensional viewpoint unless he wanted to. And so he ran Atlantis for some 16,000 years. And he was all over the place. There's another aspect that has been mentioned relative to the Mayans, and that's what Jose Arguella mentions, and not in the Mayan factor, but in his book, Surfers of the Zavoya.
Oh, I enjoyed that book.
That he mentions the Mayan as being a planet. That's kind of interesting. We're trying to track that down. But that's basically what that's...
So the planet in the Pleiades
involved
constellation?
Yeah. Now, the Tree of Life... The Tree of Life can be generated and can be seen in the sacred geometrical figure of Metatron's cube.
I'm not familiar with Metatron's cube. What is that?
I'll send you one. A drawing of it. It's basically a two-dimensional depiction of a three-dimensional... representation that is the seed for everything. Everything can come from that, the seed of creation. And really, to understand all this, everything, you have to go very, very deep into a study of history, consciousness, neurophysiology, everything. You have to be the supreme eclectic type of leaning, and you really have to be wanting to know who you are and what everything's about.
Scott, anything else?
I was just wondering, I can feel the shift that's coming on that everybody's talking about here, the big shift happening in 2012. Here in the Northwest, it's very
people
strong.
People in general, Scott, but, over the past year or two have been feeling more and more psychic, if you will, impulse. We're picking up on more things, and to the degree that they are doing this, the powers that were have been trying to suppress this, both by putting stuff into the food, water, electronically, and otherwise. I mean, look at the cellular telephone system, for instance. 840 to 890 megacycles, that just happens to be the same resonant frequency of the human skull. These people know what they're doing.
Mm. The last question I have is, to make this shift in humankind, I guess, easier on more people, what would your suggestion be?
Well, they're gonna go through it anyway, whether they like it or not. Whatever new world order that's going to exist, in whatever form it's going to exist, is going to be very short-lived. To make it easy for people in general, I guess the best advice that I could give is learn how to become calm and centered within yourself. And read Matrix 3.
Uh-huh.
Go understand that social consciousness operates from the first three structural areas of the brain. Okay, involving security, sensation, power, and fear.
Oh, our amphibian brain, so to speak.
The reptilian brain is the first part.
Reptilian brain, thank you.
So if you can really get rid of the idea of fear and become more conscious and aware, sure, you're going to do it on a cultural level. You're going to do it on a political level. You're going to understand what's going on around you. But that's the first step. The second step is to become more conscious. To become a conscious being, to get out of this sleeping thing.
Well, this really relates to our last guest's theories, too. I mean, the two seem to be jazzing on the same concept here. Jazzing on the same concept here. Shifting
almost
consciousness.
Almost exactly.
Yeah.
They're very close.
I'm glad you noticed that, too, Scott.
Yes, I was sitting back thinking about that. So we're all trying to become more than human, basically. That's what's happening.
No, you see, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience.
What are we?
We're spiritual beings having a human experience.
Uh-huh. It's a whole different directional.
Indeed. You can engage the social drama to whatever level that you wish. In other terms, it's a game. Okay? It's a learning experience. And through your experience, you gain wisdom, which doesn't have a polarity. And from that, you gain your personal truth. Okay? Everybody wants to know what's disinformation, what's true, what's not true. And you know, what people believe. Don't believe anything. You know, beliefs have nothing to do with experience. If you experience something, then you know it. There's a big difference there. If you believe something, you can be manipulated. You know?
But I guess you have the experience, and then you're going to need to interpret it somehow. You're going to need to make reference to it. You're going to need
right.
to understand
and
it.
And that's part of the deal, because when you're trying to interpret the experience, what do you interpret it with? You interpret it with previous experience. And that previous experience is loaded with predispositions, beliefs, conflicting beliefs.
Baggage.
A whole bunch of baggage.
Mm-hmm.
And things out there, and this might seem kind of a strange way of saying it, things out there have absolutely no meaning except the meaning that you give it. So, I mean, two people could look at something. One says it's good, one says it's ugly, one says it's Republican, one says it's Democrat. But it isn't any of that. It simply is. And
so
the meaning
really
you project out on it, you have to understand how consciousness works. And if people really understood who they were, they wouldn't do what they do to each other. And that's why everything political, all this political stuff on that level, is really a no thing in the end. I mean, what is voting? Go out and vote. What's vote? What is voting? Voting is saying, govern me. There's no provision made in this culture for people to become autonomous.
So I guess you have to go figure out a way to do it on your own. That's
well,
true autonomy, then.
It's happening already. Christ consciousness. If a planet is in unity consciousness, it doesn't need a government per se.
Or at least a very different one. Scott, does that answer your questions, and do you have any others?
Oh, I got millions of questions.
Okay. Go ahead. Ask a couple more. It's fine.
The last guest that was on was basically saying that a lot of the social ills that are happening in our world today are experientially there to teach us lessons of some type.
And wisdom.
And I'm exactly at that same point also, that, and that's what you're saying, I think, also, that you can't learn anything without an experience of it.
Yes.
So I was wondering if you would comment on that.
People very often get tied up in the idea of good and bad, positive and negative. But what they're there for, being part of one thing, is for timing. The timing is always perfect. Push ahead, retard, push ahead, retard.
Or you could say
the timing factors.
They say that's how we walk, you know, one foot rests while the other one moves, and that one rests while the other one moves.
Yeah, the difference on a cultural, political level between the idea of positive and negative is that positive acknowledges the whole being value of self and spirit, if you will. The negative polarity attempts to replace that with ego aggrandizement, okay, for security, sensation, and power, and that's exactly what all the media and all the cultural programming and everything circulates around is aggrandizement of the ego or the alter ego. And
that's what Verne says. It's just feeding on its own pathology. It's just perpetrating the pathology.
And yes, and deep down inside, people know, they know something's wrong. They have an essence. They suspect certain things, but having no other reference point, they're not willing to make that little leap. They shouldn't be afraid to make that leap. They are the path, you know. They have more in common than they suspect. You know, consciousness is the name of the game, not politics.
Well, then what's stopping people? A lot of people aren't being stopped,
well,
and the paradigm shift is, you know,
because they have fear. They're basically culturally conditioned. And
well, by the name of your book, you would assume that you believe that we have a little help in maintaining fear. We're having a little encouragement from outside.
Yes, from part of the negative hierarchical structure, yes.
Perpetrating itself just in its own dynamics?
Yes, I mean, they're trying to cause as many unaligned people to align themselves in that direction, to supply more energy to that resonance, as it were. But that resonance is self-defeating.
Is it a conscious situation on their part, or is it just part of the dynamics of that mindset?
It's a perfectly conscious situation on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you really have to understand what the positive-negative hierarchy thing is all about. And a good friend of mine, Michael Topper, wrote some very good material on, and that's in Matrix 3, too. And you really need to understand what that's about, what the idea of positive and negative conceptually is about while you're viewing everything dualistically in order to really understand what unity means.
Could you give us just a hint and then we'll move on?
A hint with what?
What you just explained, positive and negative and what duality really means and what unity really means.
Well, positive and negative are actually a part of one thing.
Right, two sides of the same coin, sort of idea.
Okay. I mean, if it's like the only way, like I said, if people only know who they were, they wouldn't do what they do to each other. The only way the consciousness of all that is everywhere, if you would call that the creator, can maximize and differentiate the number of probable ways to evolve itself is to manifest itself from as many points as possible simultaneously.
Sure, if it's omnipotent and omnipresent, then that's easy for it to do, right?
So part of it comes through one body, manifests the personality when reacting to the environment. Another third comes through another body, but it's the same root consciousness. Okay, you can only see in other people what's in you, otherwise you wouldn't recognize it.
Right, no point of reference, okay.
Yeah, and so when these people are out here and they're, you know, a lot of people that come across things, they just don't want to hear anything. They don't want to hear about anything because they're afraid. They don't have any other reference point. If they don't have the social, cultural consciousness thing, they don't have anything. Because the faction that wants to control and manipulate identifies with control and manipulation. And if it doesn't have that, it doesn't have identity.
Okay.
Okay, and it doesn't want to lose identity.
So that's why you see polarization happening. I mean, to me, I see the one paradigm happening and a lot of growth in that direction, but at the same time, you see the old guard squeezing even tighter, hanging on even tighter.
And it's happening now because we're approaching the end of this 26,000-year period. We're going into a major shift for the planet as well, but for all the entities on this planet into a different octave.
And we'll hear more about that when we come back. We're going to rejoin Val Valerian just after the news. I'm Laura Lee, and you're listening to 570 KVI. We have one line open. That's our Snohomish line. The number's 348-5757 if you'd like to join us. Back in just a moment. Back, and the phone lines are quite busy. We better get to those phones and start with Kent in Olympia, who's calling long distance. Hi, Kent. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Val, I was listening to you, and is your Matrix series based on the psychic material worlds or the illusionary worlds? And does it, or have you done any research or composed any thoughts on paper about what I would call soul level and above?
The answer to your first question is no. As any kind of totality, and the second question, yes. And I was just about to get into that, actually.
See what synchronicity happens
indeed.
In the show.
Pardon me?
You picked that up. I was about to get into that.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, I didn't know what Vern was going to talk about, and I didn't know what you were going to talk about, except only very vaguely, and it so surprises me when things all kind of coalesce and
you know,
I hear the same message.
There's a lot more.
It happens over and over.
There's a lot more. When you talk about psychosocial aspects, it goes beyond cultural level. It starts going into a lot of other things. And I was going to talk about that, which would take a little while. But before I do that, we can have more questions.
Great.
Kent, do you have any other questions for Val?
Yes, I do, actually. Just getting warmed up here.
Okay.
On your saying, now the first step, as you see it, or as I'm interpreting you, is letting go of race consciousness, and that, of course, is the race consciousness of the planet, and then it goes on to a galactic or a third-dimensional race consciousness?
Well, not precisely. You have the general idea, though. I think as a reference for what you really are talking about, I would read some of Robert Anton Wilson's books, primarily quantum physics or quantum psychology. Are you familiar with his work?
No.
Okay, check it out. Robert Anton Wilson. He does some very good Prometheus Rising. I would highly recommend it to answer your question. But in answer to your question, we're going in and getting in touch with neurogenetic consciousness. I'm getting kind of an echo here.
We are. Tell you what, Kent, why don't we have you finish your questions? I think we've got a funny, fuzzy phone line, and then we'll
have
you
hang up. We're going dimensional here.
There we go. Kent, do you have anything else? And then
There's a book called The Keys of Enoch.
Yes.
And in it, some of the material I found very interesting as it rang an intuitive bell, and is what you're associating this whole change on the outer level related to the shedding of the RNA-DNA molecule and the information being fed to the neural or the nervous system?
Essentially, what you say is reasonably correct, yes. Uh-huh.
I didn't understand that, so I'm going to have you repeat that in just a moment. But I'm sure also, Val, there's a book list that you could send us that would be very useful. Kent, could you explain what you meant, and then I want to hear Val explain what you... I didn't get that one.
Well, there's a part of the book in The Keys of Enoch that to me I interpreted as... Because for me, everything that happens outwardly is just a mirror. As Val was mentioning earlier, there are technology.
Right.
And the races that do left brain work, to me, it's a mirror of what we can do within ourselves without the technology. However, technology is the first stepping stone to realizing that through the mirrors. And also that as the involutionary process coincides with the evolutionary process, our internal RNA-DNA molecules shed old ideas, as it were, and this in turn releases new information on how to actually raise our vibration. Well, that's how I understand it at this point, and I really...
So it can change the miasms around it, kind of the energetic message around it, you mean?
Well, to my understanding, it just increases the frequency and the vibration of our molecules and atoms.
Basically, what you're doing is you're tapping into the higher brain structures as a consciousness filter, the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh brain structures.
So you start vibrating on that before you actually leap there.
Right.
Okay. Kent, wonderful question. Thanks for calling. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thanks.
Anything else you want to add before we take the next call, Val?
Oh, go ahead.
421-5757 is a line that's now open. We'll take our next call from Harry in Redmond. Hi, Harry. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, hello, Laura Lee. Val, most certainly a fascinating discussion, and I can relate to a great deal of what you have to say. The Merkaba, for example, and the rotation of the tetrahedral fields might sound a little far out to some people until you encounter them yourself. I'd like to shift over a little bit and ask you for your opinion of the current enigma of the crop circles and the harbingers of world change, if you're familiar with that, and maybe the interpretations of Isabella Kingston.
Yes, I'm familiar with that.
All right, I'd like to have your comments.
Synchronistically, I've become familiar with just about everything fairly quickly, whether I like it or not.
We also had Isabella on the show not too long ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I missed that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of interpretations relative to that.
What is your feeling about the crop circle enigma and so forth and that?
Well, the most interesting work that I have seen relative to the crop circles is the work done by Ralph Noyes.
By Noyes? Mm-hmm.
Yes, crop circle enigma. And what he has discovered in here is that the crop circles have energy-based connections to... the Earth grid, specifically to ley lines, and he really goes into a lot of very interesting work discussing different kinds of energy lines, whirly lines, different multiple ley lines, really interesting work. And it really seems to be manifesting seemingly as an expression, it's an expression of intelligence, whether it in fact is part of the Earth's planetary mind manifesting certain geometric aspects, or it is another species trying to do this for a specific reason is not quite clear at this particular point.
Actually, Gerald Hawkins says the same thing. He says the certain circles express the diatonic music scale and Euclidean geometrics. They're inherent in the ratio of the patterns. Now, whether they're human or alien is of a question he can't answer, but
right.
He can tell you that they're obviously intelligent. They know a lot of math.
Right. And the most interesting one recently was the one that was z squared minus lambda. Basically, what that is the Mandelbrot pattern. There was a series of crop circles in the Mandelbrot
right,
pattern.
Right, coming up recently, yes.
Right. You know, obviously, if trying to gain attention, whatever it is trying to gain human attention on higher levels of expression.
Mm-hmm. Does that relate at all to the Matrix 3, which I have not read yet, I'm going to pick up, but do you treat this?
No, I don't really discuss that in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these things progress, you know, with evolution of consciousness, generally my own, and other people that, you know, we interact with, so on all different levels. So it just depends on what appears to be appropriate to inject into the civilization at any specific time in order to create the desired effect.
Okay.
Basically of saying, well, people appear to be ready to understand this or that, so it's put out.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if we say a similar message on a lot of different levels,
sure.
Might get through. Yeah.
Sure.
Harry, thanks for your call.
All right, Shirley, thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Margaret in Bellevue, hi. Thanks for joining us. You're on 570 KVI with Val Valerian.
Okay, good evening. I had a question that popped in my mind as you were talking a while back. I like to do really specific questions because mm-hmm. otherwise I could get on for 20 minutes. But how does one protect oneself against electromagnetic pollution?
Well, on certain levels, there's two main levels to look at this as. One on the level of awareness, on another level of consciousness, which I might have to explain that.
Why don't you go ahead and do that?
On a level of awareness, it's understanding what is going on. Understanding, and there's more stuff on that in Matrix 3 than any other book on the face of the planet.
Say that again. I didn't hear. You weren't speaking loud enough.
In other words, understanding what's going on, what is being done electronically, how it's being done, why it's being done. In other words, becoming aware of it. That's the first step.
I mean, just intellectually.
Well, yes.
Okay.
In understanding.
Eyes open. Yeah.
The second step would be taking, if you want, shield your brain from different things. You could, you know, use common precautions like maybe line a wall with sheet of copper foil or
sleep in a Faraday shield.
No.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a spring mattress, put a piece of aluminum screen between the spring mattress and your box mattress and your
what would that
mattress.
Do? What would aluminum screen do?
Well, the springs in the mattresses are specific dimensions which are standardized, and they act like little antennas, and they pick up stuff and they radiate people during the night. They're gauged to be specific
so
dimensions.
So you're probably in resonant with everyone else that has the same sort of spring magnets or
well, we're talking aluminum springs. We're getting into scalar areas and some other things that are going on. You know, there are certain precautions that you can take. Now, moving to the other area, consciousness itself, embodying basically the tachyon area, functions at around 10 to the 65th cycles per second, if you could convert it to cycles per second.
And tachyon refers to?
Well, it's basically an energy that's allied with consciousness itself.
Okay.
So a lot of these effects that they're doing electronically depend on hyperspatial fields. In other words, fields that are 90 degrees rotated from the electromagnetic field. And so in order to overcome this, you have to overcome the upper the higher order frequency. You have to be resonating at a frequency higher than the higher order frequency that's manifesting itself, you know, hyperspatially as an effect. You have to get higher than the stuff that they're beaming out, as it were, in resonance.
Oh, I see. So then you're not affected because you're on a different frequency.
Right, and you're becoming aware of yourself. You're becoming aware, gee, did that thought come into my head? That doesn't belong there, because you know yourself. You're clear. You're at peace inside. And, you know, that's part of it, too. So consciousness itself becomes a defense, you see. So you can look at it on many different levels. It's fairly well explained in the book, but, you know, we're always endeavoring to explain things in various ways to make it well understood.
So they're not capable of mechanically or whatever they're using creating this dissonance at these higher frequencies?
Who's not?
They're not capable of what now?
Well, my understanding of what you're saying is that there's a conscious and deliberate attempt to kind of to weaken us by creating this electromagnetic pollution. And
yes, but that's one aspect of it in the environment. The other aspect is direct, purposeful irradiation of the populace on certain frequencies to manifest physiologically through the different fields surrounding to the body. Fields surrounding the body, variations and impacts on those fields manifest themselves after a certain period of time physiologically. And they know how to do this.
Yeah,
every auric band around, if you look at that particular envelope and that particular geometry, every band has an access frequency, okay? And they can entrain stuff in resonance on that frequency and affect the body on a cellular resonance level.
What's an example of a manifestation that happens from that certain resonant level that's being engineered?
I get the cold. I get a cold.
Weakening of the immune system is one.
Okay.
Suppression of psychic ability is another. You know, they don't want people to evolve. They want to maintain control. You know, that's the way that they have basically an Orion-based mentality when it comes to this. So this is not the only planet that's ever had trains, boats, planes, flying saucers, and people in black suits with fedoras, you know. This is not the only place that's ever had that. This basic structure of this culture is not from here. That's why it seems so unnatural in very many basic aspects to it. I mean, they replace money is tied into the survival mode, to tied into the survival-based areas of the brain, and they've really got everybody on a hook here.
So in a sense, when you hear people like Peter Russell who say, you know, look at the way that cities manifest and grow, it looks exactly like a cancer cell. You know, quite literally, you're saying it's like the Earth caught a virus and it's starting to take over, or it took over.
Well, again,
and reproduced itself. I mean, you could say metaphorically in a sense.
It might seem sort of anthropomorphic. In other words, looking at everything from a human point of view, what I'm going to say here, but what's going on here on this planet now is something that's never gone on anywhere else. And that's why it's attracting so much attention from everyone. Because there's a resolution of polarities that is coming to the fore right now that has to be resolved before this octave leap. And there are a lot of species here that are involved with it on one level or another, that are here to do that as well. So that, you know, it's a precedental situation here on many different levels. And if you just look at everything from a get up and go to work social consciousness mentality, you'll never understand it. You know, you have to get more conscious as a collective civilization and the mass consciousness, and that's basically the reason why we and many others have been injecting these understandings out there, so people who are predisposed, and they're becoming more predisposed as more people are becoming predisposed because of the morphogenic field, they'll pick up on this.
Margaret, anything else you want to ask?
Well, I want to follow up again. I didn't quite understand. Now, he said that the the radiation that's being directed at us is designed to keep us down. So
a little docile.
And you say the way to protect ourselves from it is to rise up above it. But I thought the whole point of irradiating us is to keep us from rising above us. So
how do you get out of the catch 22?
How do we protect ourselves when we're still here?
Well, it depends on. Well, you can engage it on a mass to mass level by interposing different substances between you and it, as I mentioned before.
Okay.
But if you align yourself and work on you, who you are, and start raising your consciousness, start activating those higher brain centers, then it will have less and less effect because you'll become more aware of what it's doing physiologically and otherwise.
Okay, that's in your Matrix 3 book?
Pardon?
That's in your Matrix 3 book?
Yes.
Are you talking about that?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, something
it needs
like
to be talked about more, but I mean, it's basically there, yes.
So something as simple as Hatha Yoga could, I mean, its purpose, one of the purposes, besides sort of giving you a chiropractic adjustment yourself, is, you know, to start aligning those higher centers, right? So, I mean, historically, there's a lot of systems and methods and tools to use. Would you say, Val?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Margaret, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Todd in Tacoma. Hi, thanks for joining us. You're on 570 KVI.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a question that you talked about something probably about an hour ago, experimenting with livestock, sexual organs.
Yeah.
And I was under the impression, I'd heard a while back, that the Atlanteans used to breed in seasons, just like animals come into season. And I was wondering if you might be able to elaborate on that or if you've heard of that.
Well, this goes back a lot farther than that. It goes back to about 200,000 years ago.
Okay.
I mean, even goes back, actually, well, primarily later than that, back in Lemurian times. There was a lot of, don't forget, there were humans who were basically bred 200,000 years ago, and they were used partially to work the gold mines.
Okay, yeah, that's coming from Sitchin, right?
Right.
Okay.
And other sources. The gold was primarily used by the species that comes around that Sitchin mentions every 3,500 years.
On the planet Chiron?
The Marduk.
Oh, okay.
Because they have had a problem with their atmosphere, and a gold, molecular gold suspension was the way in the atmosphere was a way to fix that. And so they needed to mine a lot of gold. Gold is, depending on whatever isotope you use, is a valuable substance all over the universe because of its characteristics. And humans were also used in a place called Edin, which is E.D.I.N., which was actually in southern Iraq at the time. But at that time, it was more like a jungle-type atmosphere. And what this thing was that the tree of good and evil was is that humans learned how to sexually reproduce, and they didn't want humans to do that because they wanted to continue the creation. They wanted to continue to essentially breed humans out of the laboratory, and moving ahead to a Lemuria, they did a lot of skeletal and cranial work on humans at that particular time, and there's been a lot of activity with humans and other species again later on in Atlantis. As genetic work, once you start learning about all this stuff, the temptation to go and go throw together anything you wish to do. I mean, it's not really a bad thing to do. It's part of the wisdom behind the efforts of creation. As you start to gain consciousness, that you create in different ways, and it's part of the wisdom in there. It's not necessarily a negative thing, but there's a lot of wisdom to how and what you do and when you do it that is constantly being learned. And just like with this thing with the asteroids, where they're talking about asteroids coming and we're going to shoot them down with SDI or whatever, that's an Atlantean remnant coming up. And so is the genetic stuff that's going on now. It's a repeat. So here we are back in the same ball game.
Maybe we'll get it right this time.
Well, it's going to get itself right for us. You see, that's it's kind of working itself out.
So if that's inevitable that we're going to get it right this time, then your motivation for getting your consciousness more aligned with this universal, intelligent, implicate order would be, at least you're going to have an easier ride and a easier go of it while it's happening.
Yeah.
And probably contribute to the ease of the next person as well.
Yes.
Okay. Who are we talking with? Todd? Yeah, anything else?
Yeah, the mining of the gold, I guess, gets to my next question. That with what we hear about now, that we're going to have to stock up on gold to barter with aliens. Is there any truth to that, or could you elaborate on
that? Where did you hear that?
The truth is somewhat relative, but if you feel you need to stock up on gold to barter with aliens, just press on. It's not necessary to do something like that. I think that's probably a misnomer. Unless you happen to locate some aliens that have a big need for gold.
Okay.
That's about the only reason you'd have to do that. Again, you won't need all that stuff very soon anyway. So it's kind of a moot point.
Okay, and then I was just wondering if you could give the address for Val again.
Val, go ahead. Why don't you give it this time?
P.O. Box 481. Yelm, Y-E-L-M, Washington, 98597.
Okay, I think that answers all my questions. Thank you.
But you're not connected with the Jay-Z Knight down in Yelm?
No.
Okay.
No, that's just where my post office box is.
All right, just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. Steve in Lacey. Hi, thanks for joining us. You're on 570 KVI.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering if he could elaborate on what he thinks of Merlin, the legendary character. I've come up with a few theories of my own as far as Merlin goes, with being a time traveler and such, seeing how books tend to indicate that he was rather helpful in the building of Stonehenge and had something to do with these giants.
You got it.
That was it?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, but he wanted you to elaborate on that.
I don't know if I can really elaborate too much more on that at this point in time, but he's essentially correct.
Okay, can you maybe say a little something about the purpose of the pyramids?
Purpose of the pyramids?
Well, see, I tend to think that they were originally had, you know, the electric capabilities. My theory is that they were originally used for the deflection of the asteroids.
My theory is
that's not exactly correct, but you are intuitively latching on to something else that they were involved with. The pyramids basically were created by Thoth. The three pyramids in Giza and all the other ones are laid out in a Fibonacci spiral.
Fibonacci
spiral.
Mm-hmm.
The pyramids were initiation areas. If you compute the path of energy within the pyramidal structure, you have two Fibonacci spirals, one positive and white electrical, and you have a negative black magnetic.
So,
and they went through different points.
Oh, we're getting up to that break time again. But we'll continue. I guess basically I'm sensing that this is going to be kind of an energy battery of bioelectric or magnetic energies.
Right.
We'll hear more about it when we come back. We'll start off with those pyramids and get the full explanation from Val Valerian when we come back, and we'll continue.
Like the entities, you talked about entities being drawn from other dimensions and injected into human consciousness and things like that.
Yeah, well, I'll end up getting into it. There are, you know, what I wanted to talk about, there, we already talked about the first level of psychosocial aspects, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that's the cultural one. Now we're going to start moving up. There's four of them that I discuss in the book, and I kind of like to get in because I think it'll really spark a lot of memories for people here somewhere.
Go ahead.
But it'll take a while, so I want to make sure that the calls are will permit that.
Okay, so have you ever run into these people, since you have such similar material, and discuss this, or...
Yes.
This is similar to Scientology?
Oh, yeah, it's replete.
Well, you know, he uncovered a lot of stuff, and a lot of stuff, and like the book...
Well, how can these people practicing Scientology are just also weird and vicious?
Well, like I said, Hubbard uncovered a lot of material that undoes a lot of the mind control imprinting that's done culturally, and that's why they wanted him to participate in their mind control programs. And because he refused, they started injecting other people into his close-knit group of friends, which formed Scientology, as it were, in that manner, and basically subverted everything Hubbard was originally trying to do.
Yeah, that's why he went underground.
Pardon?
That's why he went underground and disappeared. Nobody.
Well, yes, that's part of the reason, but I mean, it basically
subverted. But you're not advocating joining present-day Scientology,
no,
I would hope.
No,
absolutely not.
No, it's the,
right.
it's the basic
it's
knowledge.
It's too poorly.
The mind horror of Scientology is very different from
yeah.
what we're talking about. Okay.
But a lot of the information you uncovered, as you will see, is very, very applicable and bears itself out.
Hmm.
At least in my experience, it does.
Hmm. Anything else, Shay?
Yeah, I had one more aside
Go
here.
Go ahead.
A lot of these programs I listen to, they have trigger words that trigger my memories of my own experiences with these so-called folks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yours was, you started talking about things underground or something, I can't remember. But in 88... NASA broadcast on, let's see, well, they put out this thing through their public relations department that they're accepting ideas from the general public on how to establish a moon base.
That's a laugh. They've already had one. Or
well, that's exactly what my question
that was. Part
was
of their, that
because
was part of
the idea that I came up with, it wasn't a normal thought process. It did evolve over a period of weeks, but I got nauseous and a lot of other things as this memory progressed. But what I came up with was an underground moon base for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you know, amazing the way
well, it might
that
have
this evolved.
Sometimes.
I was wondering if you'd heard anything like that. Is there an underground facility up there? Or
yes, there is, on the
yeah.
far side, yes.
On the what side?
On the far side. You see,
oh, the far side.
On the part of the program, you know, Alternative 3, that whole idea, is probably somewhere between 60% and 70% correct in many aspects.
What's Alternative 3?
Where they decided that they wanted to gather the elite together with a little help from alien technology and leave the planet and leave everybody to their
doom.
Right. Oh, is this a recent thing?
It's been occurring for about the last 30 years. What they discovered, what they've recently discovered, is that when there is a planetary axis shift, it doesn't just occur on Earth, it occurs on all the planets.
So it's kind
so
of a
all their,
through
all
the
their
whole
stuff
solar
on
system.
The moon and Mars and everywhere else, they had to go throw that out. Now they're faced with, now they're starting to be faced on those levels with the reality of what's really going on. And so now there are a lot of power struggles on a lot of levels grappling at this particular moment.
I mean, some of the people are getting it and some aren't, and so there's a lot of internal conflict about
yes,
what to do.
There's a lot of internal
So they might just implode from within?
They've set themselves up for that, haven't they?
Well, if they're really getting it and they're going, well, consciousness is the key here, you know, why aren't they out in some yoga classes and why aren't they out,
well, I mean, that's
you know,
the
doing light
of,
therapy?
I mean,
and
the Army was, the Army and training the Psi Corps, I mean, they've got equipment that they've got alternate reality generators they can carry around a suitcase and pull a switch and step over to the next star system.
Actually,
you know, they've got
yoga's
technology
kind of
that you wouldn't believe. But they were training the Psi Corps to go and do a lot of different things for military purposes, and they discovered that, you know, the more conscious these people came, the less they wanted to do all the nasty, dirty work. You know, so, I mean, it's
that's the effect of higher states of consciousness.
Yeah,
it's transforming.
It's self-defeating for a negative alignment.
I always thought about that. I always thought that, you know, if you really knew the gifts of the universe, you couldn't possibly go out and be an evil person.
Well, you'd
by
be doing
the very
it
knowledge of it.
In the end, yes.
Yeah, but the very knowledge of it, it would be transforming so that you would be aligned with the implicate order. It would be transforming you aligned to that. So how could you maintain a different mindset? Otherwise, you wouldn't be getting that.
Yeah, it is kind of a quandary for the other side, yeah.
All right, Shay, anything else?
Well, just one more quick. How do you get all this information now? Does this kind of just evolve in you, or do
I think you get secret packages in the mail, don't you?
On occasion.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, this is evolving.
Oh, you're serious?
Well, yeah. I mean, I get the information comes from a lot of different sources. A lot of it is my own experience, which moves through many different lifetimes, not only this one. I mean, I've done this before. I do what I do, and I've done it in different places, and this is just another place, and this is...
So you get this by recalling past experiences or something?
Some of it, sure, but I mean, it's not, it's a lot more than that. It's linking in with everything, you see. There's, it's hard to really explain how
so
it works.
you transgress onto other dimensions? Is that it?
Well, I think also that that information just flows,
you know,
if you're willing to see it.
People know an awful lot. If people would only talk to each other and share their common experience, they would learn a lot, but they don't talk to each other.
Well, as sophisticated and detailed like your pyramid ritual and things like that, people are going to be able to just talk about?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Well, you know, people know a lot more than you think they do.
Because, see, my feeling is that this is a very sophisticated deal going on here where people like Whitley Strieber and various folks are being hypnotized and programmed with this information that's very sophisticated and very elaborate and detailed. And it's, I don't know, I'm kind of in between thinking,
it might be UFOs,
or it might be a very elite, sophisticated group of people running around raising hell with people and destroying.
Well, there are several different elite groups of people running around raising hell with people.
And programming them with this type of information. I'm not saying that's what happened to you, I'm just speculating.
There's a lot of manipulation going on.
Yeah.
At various and sundry levels, and there are a lot of hierarchies operating here with the idea of control and manipulation. So it's really kind of looking at everything and reflecting on your own experience. I mean, don't believe anything.
I'd also caution you from joining any groups. I mean, all these people that show up at this rally and this protest and this anti-abortion
they're just getting
their strings pulled by some hidden agenda. And
they're
just so sad to see them innocently walking into being used by some force they're not even aware of.
Yeah, they're getting entangled in the experience. They're getting drawn into the experience without having it. They're having the experience have them. I mean, if you believe in something, then you're going to get manipulated by it very easily. And it's been said before in many, many sources about the nature of belief. And it's there's one particular reference to the idea of belief. I'm trying to recall what it is, but it really has to do with.
I know what it is. It's like prejudice is a labor-saving device. Because if you're prejudiced, you don't have to get to the bottom of something. You don't have to research it and figure it out and think about it.
Well,
so in a
that's
sense,
part of it.
Yeah.
Doesn't this stuff, though, take a lot of belief and a lot of faith?
Well, no. Forget about belief and forget about faith. Okay?
How can you do that?
Belief is convincing yourself of something you have yet to know and understand through experience.
Because if you knew it, you wouldn't believe it, you'd know it.
Yeah, and belief, you're placing your life, your attitudes, and your trust in something which has not founded itself in truth within your being, which causes you to be vulnerable. In that state of vulnerability, you can be manipulated, accursed, damned, or can lose your life, all because of belief. You have to know what it is you wish to know. You can simply do that by asking for the understanding and listening to the feelings within you about that.
For example, you know, you have two armies and they're going to go at each other because one is of one religion and one's of another, or one holds a certain belief system and the other another.
What's really going on.
Yeah, or if they got down to the bottom line, which is, you know, isn't it better to make love than war? You know, why are they doing this? Why are they being manipulated
One society is threatening the other with control.
Yeah.
Right.
So
they have to
establish control. The negotiations break down and they have no choice.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of, like judgment, for instance. I mean, every being has their own way of exploring the idea of their existence. It doesn't mean that you have to live that way yourself, nor does it mean you have to judge the way somebody else is living as invalid. If you're busy judging what they're doing is less than what they could be doing, then you are the one maintaining those effects and those realities in your reality when you focus on them. The situation is radically different when memory is blocked by neurological factors and the constraints of being in a body are realized. Much of early human existence is consumed by frustration during the effort to obtain control over the body. And this, along with the focus of consciousness being progressively focused through succeeding neurological structures in the brain as the physical organism develops, contributes to initial and often permanent restriction of the focus of consciousness on the body. Add the requirement for physical nourishment and the emotional habits that result from it, and you have an interesting situation. In addition, the perception is restricted through the physical senses, thus the process of focus of conscious awareness is turned to the dualities of pain and pleasure through the reptilian area of the brain, fight and flight, etc. Attention is focused on the experienced events, and then the experience is retained as a habitual form of memory, aligned with a stimulus-response fashion. That's what I said, where people work through the lower three areas of the brain. Emotion is an enhancer of the storage process for responses.
Okay, which explains a lot of the self-help stuff out now.
Uh-huh.
You know, emotions are actually that storage spot.
So learning systems in cultural settings typically feature situations where fluctuating attention is cast on low-order repetitive tasks, such as rote memorizing, which denigrates much of the learning that could potentially occur. These methods of learning in our educational system, more like conditioning, are held in high esteem in human existence. Virtually all revolves around the knowledge, understanding, and control and application of physical matter and energy systems generated therein. This dominant yet artificial and limited system of learning operates entirely through input from the five senses and has the effect of eliminating the last vestiges of identity and self-cognition from the individual. I'm discussing the brain areas here.
Right.
So there are two factors which contribute to such addictions. As the entity moves through life in human form, many attachments are formed. The most powerful of these attachments are emotional attachments, which relate solely to expression only in time-space reality structures. This results in a compulsive need to re-enter and recycle human experience to complete that which has been started, as it were. And this disappears. This kind of compulsion disappears with increased levels of consciousness. But there are two factors which contribute to such addictions to human space-time dramas. The first is a functional distortion of the survival drive into the elements of body protection and maintenance, as well as sexuality and reproduction. Both bodily protection and maintenance relate to the drive for acquisition of food and water, followed by the drive to maintain a suitable body temperature, the need to keep the body safe from predation, all the way from being eaten to the assault from biological organisms.
Isn't that just a necessity of existing in a three-dimensional environment?
From a certain standpoint, if you look at the body as a light body, especially on other wavelengths, it's totally irrelevant.
Oh, when you limit your consciousness to seeing just the physical body and not the other subtle bodies, then that is the arena in which you're playing, and that's the inevitable result.
It's not effective in that within mm-hmm. that domain on a different wavelength, though, because mm-hmm. Your body is basically a light body.
Right. Okay.
And so, by far the largest accumulated load is the emotional mass loosely held as the human ego. Originally a primal output from the survival imprint, it generates large numbers of emotional patterns which need constant reinforcement to maintain their existence. The drive for reinforcement consumes a tremendous amount of psychic energy. The ego exploits the concept that it is needed in order for the individual to exist and achieve, that the emotion of confidence cannot exist without ego support, and that happiness is a satisfied ego. So the ego brings forth a torrent of emotionally irrational reasons to justify its existence, sidestepping the fact that emotion and irrationality are not synonymous. Because of consciousness, which you're a part, it's not dependent on space-time for its existence. It's inevitable that many patterns are retained when entities are no longer in this dimension.
It's inevitable whether what? Your last sentence?
It is inevitable that many patterns are retained when entities are no longer in this dimension. Patterns from previous experience.
Okay.
But that's actually not previous, because actually when you get in
simultaneous
different wavelengths, time becomes spherical.
Right.
It's like assuming you were going through day-to-day an experience, a whole day, and you looked at every moment of that day as a frame in a motion picture film. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And suppose you were able to do that, and suppose you jumped out of that film and laid the whole film on the table, and you could look at the whole day from a higher dimensional perspective.
Because that is the point of view of that higher dimension, right? You can see it all.
And a lot of times people fragment things. When you actually perceive something, you're separate from it. The only way you can actually know something is to become it. In terms of culture or religion, people say they want to know God and everything. You have to become this, and in fact you are. In many aspects, you are part of the Creator. So in order to know that, you have to become it. So in a cultural level, if all the people in all the religions knew who they were, they'd be out of a job.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting. There's much discussion about the idea of free will. Within a space-time format, the physical nature of the human body is that it contains genetic programming in the form of behavioral and emotional patterns that have been locked into the DNA structure, which is derived from every physical body that's ever contributed DNA to the physical body that's occupied. That means your father, their father,
so you're
mother.
In effect carrying all your ancestors with you.
A lot of reactive patterns and things like that. So you have that plus the cultural programming. You've got a lot of stuff to get rid of and understand. So these emotional patterns place constraints on the activity and the consciousness of the entity using the body, while the consciousness of the entity is indistinguishable from body consciousness. What remains is culturally viewed as free will. The free will can be coerced. Body consciousness is composed mostly of genetic programming. This is what the genetic entity, as it were, what responds when you do muscle testing. That's the genetic entity, the total consciousness of the body. The environmental and cultural programming make up the balance. So body consciousness itself is almost entirely a chemically based consciousness, okay? And this can be heavily influenced by electronics, and that's part of what the mind control thing is.
Oh, I see.
Okay. It's the basic consciousness of what has been referred to as the genetic entity, the consciousness of the body itself. It's not until the focus on body consciousness is broken that the occupying entity can progress in consciousness and increase perception of surrounding reality structures. You have to break that. On still a higher level of examination, you can look at the genetic programming which exists on a cellular level within the human being and examine some of the areas of interest that relate to this issue. In the human arena, the factors of mass, energy, space, and time play an important part because humans exist as composite entities, if you will, because you have a physical body, which is a biochemical electronic structure made up of mass, which exists in a time track occupying space, which has its own consciousness that's made up of holographic gestalt of cellular consciousness, ultimately based on DNA structures inherited from previous generations. The gestalt consciousness of the body can be called the genetic entity. It appears to have the highest density in the middle of the upper torso of the physical body, which can be seen as a container or vessel for the being which manipulates it. As mentioned before, any event which is experienced by a human being with an emotional component is recorded on quantum levels within the genetic structure on a cellular level. In truth, experience is recorded along with emotional patterns associated with that experience. Mental pictures are also recorded. Many times experience may include periods of physical pain or periods of unconsciousness associated with physical injury or emotional trauma. You could be watching a baseball game and get a headache, not realizing that part of the genetic memory in your genetic pattern includes somebody who inherited part of the who used part of the DNA in a previous body that got hit in the head with a baseball.
So you're saying that even we tend to attach reasons that would make sense to us to our experience when in fact it may have nothing to do with it.
It may have nothing to do with our specific experience. I mean, there's a lot of things to go through. Mm-hmm. And these memory traces are very often held at specific points on the time track of the physiological structure in which they occur. So
what do you mean? So when you hit this moment in your life, boom, that's going to happen regardless of all other input?
It could very well be so, yes.
Okay, so that's why people who are doing past life regression, you hear the story frequently that, well, when I turned 22, then this thing manifested, and I go back and I found that when I was 22 and in past life, this same situation had its point of origin. Like that kind of idea? Okay.
Uh-huh. So also memory traces and the accompanying emotional patterns that are inherent in the genetic entity manifested through the reactive mental gestalt can be re-stimulated into manifestation through external influences, which is what you're saying. So
the external influence could manifest itself through environmental factors or even on an albeit technical level through implant devices or patterns overlaid within the physical body or within the field surrounding the physical body as higher density implant patterns ingrained in the electronic interference ridges between your auric bands. And this is getting into very technical stuff, but I'm putting it out there anyway. Research indicates the substantial evidence that this is a commonly applied method of manipulation. It's apparently uncommon for the genetic entity to host the same occupying spiritual component twice, and this appears to reflect the overall tendency within the operative manifestation of the universal intelligent matrix for maximization of experiential differentiation. I know I'm using a lot of big words, but I really can't describe it any other way.
Well, I think we can handle it.
Allowing genetic structures, a plethora of controlling host entities. In other words, you as a spiritual occupying entity in a specific body and genetic line you're in have never lived before this lifetime, you see.
You're unique to this moment, but you are
You've never lived
connected.
This particular lifetime before.
Mm, I see.
So the genetic entity apparently enters the protoplasm line some 2 days to a week prior to conception. Since the genetic entity appears to answer in present time through muscle testing in a dual manner when queried through muscle testing and other methods, it's suspected that the genetic entity is in fact a double entity where one side enters via the protoplasm and the sperm and the other through the protoplasm and the ovum. An interesting aspect of the combination of genetic entity and occupying spiritual entity is that there seems to be some evidence that both components of the composite human being carry facsimiles of the memory of each other, producing multiple facsimiles of past deaths for the same period of linear time.
Interesting. We're coming up to that break. That was Val Valerian reading from his book Matrix 3, was it?
Yes.
And we'll continue when we come back. Do you want to spend some more time with us?
Oh, there's a lot of interesting things to cover.
And we have a lot of phone calls as well. So we'll let you finish on the other side.
And the other 8%.
Done any studies? Run some through some chemical analysis?
Supplied by Canadian British suppliers include, in your cigarettes, shellac, acetone and turpentine, acetaldehyde, and glycol, which are animal carcinogens, methyl acylate, which causes birth defects in hamsters when given oral or topically, licorice root containing glyceric acid producing cancer-causing polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons when burned, catechol, a co-carcinogen and a byproduct of heated sugars. They use sugar to go and cure the tobacco. If you air cure tobacco, it doesn't do anything to you, really.
Oh, like the Native Americans?
And other additives that strengthen the effect of cancer-causing compounds when heated. The list of additives is in the American brands is filed in the Department of Health and Human Services and protected from public scrutiny by criminal penalties against anyone disclosing it.
So weird.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's just, you know, one of 10,000.
Plus, we're subsidizing the tobacco industry.
Pardon?
We're the taxpayers subsidizing the tobacco industry big time, too.
Indeed.
You know what? I have a Kent from Olympia.
There's even a thing where they lace the tobacco paper, possibly with opium derivatives.
Oh,
so really, the combination of all this stuff makes it almost impossible for people to really.
Well, who in the right mind would smoke cigarettes if they knew all of this, right?
Because they're addicted, they don't have to be in their right mind at all.
Oh, I see. They're biochemically hooked in. Yeah,
and of course the whole industry relies on all this stuff. And you know as well as I do that this kind of perverse mental framework extends to the entire military-industrial complex, the medical industry, everybody that makes a buck off. I mean, if the American system, medical system, was like the Canadian medical system, where the government had to pay everything, you'd bet they'd go and issue the cures for everything that they have right away instead of doing all this research.
Right.
I mean, so much of this airborne viral bacteriological warfare has been developed as part of the cancer program, under the guise of cancer research. There's so much that's been going on.
Wait, we donate to cancer programs, and instead of finding the cure for cancer, they're finding more causes of cancer.
All this has been absolutely, completely documented. There's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that all this is going on. I mean, there's so much. And then you have the besides the fluoride gambit and all that, you have the immunization.
Yeah, we've covered that.
The immunization gambit.
We've covered
that. That's an entire different, you know, that's another thing. And all the other, you know, using covert research and biological weapons for population management, the stuff that's been going on at Fort Detrick, even other than AIDS.
I understand that that's the place where the AIDS virus supposedly was invented. You know what? We have a caller who's been calling from Olympia that we should take for just a moment. Kent in Olympia. Hi,
yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for being patient.
You're welcome. Val.
Yes.
There's a book called Illusions by Richard Bach. It's one of my favorite ones. And there's a quote in there, "The mark of your ignorance is the depth of your belief in injustice and tragedy."
Yes.
And through your experience, one of my challenges right now is to is looking at that and connection with being of service.
Uh-huh.
Not so much with judgments, but just being of service.
Well, you know what judgment is. Do you understand what the idea of judgment
for
is?
For me, it means prejudice or prejudgment.
Well, you know, it's really choosing what you prefer. You know, choose what you prefer and let everyone else have the right to live the way they want to, knowing that the way they live has nothing to do with the way you choose to live and will not affect you if it is not what you prefer. Preference is not judgment. Judgment is invalidating everything you don't prefer. When you invalidate something, you become equal to it, and thus what you do not want, you become.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then that's really what's behind the phrase, "Judge not, and ye shall not be judged."
Right.
Okay. It means that essentially you become what you hate. So,
haven't you seen that happen to people and institutions? And
well,
isn't that an interesting paradox of human
dynamics?
People
are culturally conditioned to it. I mean, if you go into the educational system, which is another entire issue on a cultural level, you'll see all the little ego games and all the stuff that children are encouraged to play, and you know, it's no wonder that some people have a hard time in this kind of system, which is entirely an artificially and synthetically created disaster for trying to evolve in the system. And that's why, from another interesting and rather amusing aspect, is so desirable, because it puts out so much challenge.
We're all like the basketball players that practice in wearing rubber galoshes and gloves, right? I mean,
well, you're not if you're operating in a certain wavelength where if you whatever you think of manifests itself, there's not a lot of opportunity to gain wisdom. So you need to forget that and put yourself in a situation where that is not so. So the delay an engaging experience produces wisdom, which doesn't have a polarity, and that produces truth within you, which doesn't have a polarity either.
When you
everybody's
say it doesn't have a polarity, you mean it's not saying good and evil, yin and yang, black and white, that kind of a polarity? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, everybody's truth is true.
But what how are you using the term polarity? Just in terms of duality?
First, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, just wanted to clarify that. Kent, anything else?
Yes.
Quickly.
You know, so far we've been discussing, or I've heard you discussing, it seems to me the steps to again remember or recognize within us from a human experience to the Christ, which we already are.
Indeed.
So there's really no past and no present. Everything's happening actually right now simultaneously.
Yes, from a different perspective, yes.
Uh-huh. Then Ekinkar and MSIA... my understanding is they operate from bringing this energy into this level.
There are
and bypassing all the psychic material levels or lessons. As
okay,
far
what?
As the
well, there you know there are a whole bunch of things out there. Okay, a lot of different disciplines, a lot of different things. Very often if you go to a bookstore, you'll see a whole in the quote unquote New Age section, which. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately involves things to do with consciousness. You'll see a whole bunch of stuff, and everybody will kind of be drawn to certain things, and they'll find an element of their personal truth that relates to their experience in there that might not relate to anybody else's.
Right.
Very often, a lot of organizations and individuals will incorporate, will put out a bunch of stuff which is actually misleading to people, but they'll sprinkle enough little key elements which will be recognizable as personal truths by individuals
to hook them in.
People tend to take lock, stock, and barrel and take everything else without really reflecting on those items which they recognize in whatever they read that resonate with their experience and their own personal truth, and that's all they have to pay attention to. They don't have to believe in anything and pay attention to anything else, only their own experience. This is the whole key to it.
That's a good point.
So, I mean,
so
there's a lot out there, and you can find, you know, your personal truth in anything and a part of it out there, and all of them are correct.
Right.
But that doesn't mean the whole package is correct. So look at everything on an ad hoc basis.
Well,
you know, don't take whole
packages. That's true from one perspective, but again, the individual who prepared the package may have not done it for a reason
mm-hmm.
of misleading anything purposely. They may, in fact, totally have ingrained that into a grid work and a belief structure within their consciousness, and that's how they view reality, which is perfectly true
yeah.
for them. But it doesn't mean that just because another person doesn't see it that way in that perspective, it's not true. I mean, you
right.
have the idea of somebody in the DSM-3 who is considered in a cultural format as being psychotic, okay? Or what makes them psychotic is they are seeing another reality, but they are totally unable to explain it to anybody. So there's no point of reference, you see.
Right.
You know, I've had experience working one summer in the psychology thing in several places like that. That was an experience, and that was, you know, many years ago, but you know, I understand that. I understand it by virtue of my experience in this particular lifetime, if you must look at it linearly, and other ones on different levels. It's all there.
Do you feel that the only really true service we can be is in clearing ourselves of our illusions?
Well, illusion is a matter of perspective, I guess. But within the terms that you're saying, that I would say that's a fairly well
a good place to start.
Analysis.
Yeah.
A plate and a skull. And so you have a five-fold standing wave pattern of theta lower tachyons, which interact with the liquid crystal structure of the brain matter.
Uh-huh.
And that part of the brain structure that matches the frequency of the vibrating tachyons will respond via harmonic resonance. And the tachyons, which enfold energy, will provide deltons, which in turn create antimatter, not antimatter, but there's another, there's a higher, a different pre-matter stage of matter. Antimatter, A-N-T-E, and matter simultaneously.
Oh, and so, anti being that little, that means
not antimatter, not the opposite.
Right, that little suffix that means precedent.
Right.
Anti, okay, A-N-T-E.
And so electrons are formulated, and electric pulse flows giving rise to a perceived thought. So this can be simulated electronically, okay? So the
mm-hmm.
human brain, in essence, being a biological receiver and a transducer of thought energy.
Right.
Is a masterpiece of sacred geometry, chemistry, alchemy, and structural engineering. It's constructed in five major hard bone plates interconnected by membranes, okay? And the cranium is a superb transducer of linear and nonlinear complex vibrations. And here we're getting into the psychoactive components of electromagnetics. So these complex vibrations can also be called conjugate because they have both three-dimensional and hyperspatial components. So the natural resonant vibrational frequency of the cranium is in a range of 840 to 890 megahertz in non-Hertzian vibration. Unfortunately, an externally applied Hertzian wavefront of the same frequency can and does make the cranium undergo resonance due to entrainment. So, and they only need 10 to 20% power mm-hmm. coherence to do this.
So they pull you off your higher potential and entrain you by setting up like a tuning fork that you're going to start vibrating at this other frequency
right.
so they draw you off.
So partially,
what you could
with,
really be doing.
Partially with the help of alien technology over a period of time, government scientists can now duplicate the nonlinear, random, non-Hertzian wavefronts of thought, the so-called thinking process, and they can shut that down on people even. with the adequate modifications of RF and microwaves, they can induce vibrations in the cranium, access the neural lattice in the brain, and implant thoughts via ELF, ULF. Thus, individuals can be impacted unless they really know themselves on a deep level and
to override that program.
And think it's their own thoughts they're perceiving. Okay? So there's a relationship in sacred geometry between the constants pi and phi with the way that the cranium is constructed. The actual process of transductions of theta waves involves the ionic crystalline structure of the calcium bone in the cranium.
Right, which is crystalline structure, right?
The ionic structure, in effect, forms a phase space, which embodies a 12-dimensional tensor field between the electron shells, and the incoming theta waves are held in micro-unified fields within these crystalline structures. Resonance is established, and theta waves come down into mass, whereupon electrons are generated. That's
now
why copper has an effect on some of these, because the molecular and atomic structure of copper has a tetrahedral structure, which actually has hyperspatial components. And this is why copper is an effective shield against certain hyperspatial and electromagnetic things. It's
so wearing a copper bracelet?
ELF, though. ELF is a magnetic.
What about a lot of other devices that you hear about that are supposedly going to protect you from electromagnetic frequency? I mean, I know people that wear mandalas of the rainbow spectrum with 12, looks like a 12-flowered petaled lotus. Just the picture of it, apparently. I know people that wear Tesla watches, not Tesla technology, but something similar. People that wear ceramic chips that are, there's all sorts of devices out there.
I'm sure a lot of people will recall sometime during their life going down in some inner city area and seeing some poor soul with a piece of aluminum foil over their head for no apparent reason.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that and talk a little louder? I'm sorry.
I said I'm sure people will remember sometime in their life going down to some inner city area and seeing some poor soul with aluminum foil over their head for no apparent reason.
Oh, I see. They're just using whatever they can to try and shield this.
there's some things that you can do, I guess, to deal with it on that level.
On that level, yeah. You can tell us what they are?
Well, again, it's...
Just briefly.
Again, it has to do with some of the devices that you're talking about. I suppose in terms of consciousness, if a person has a belief structure which supports that, then...
Oh, I see. So you can activate your own, belief structure.
Yes, unknowingly, when the device really has nothing to do with it. It's the fact that you're focusing
the placebo
your
effect. Right.
That's the same function that people, when people externalize their higher element out there and call it something else of a higher nature, when in fact it's themselves, and when they address it, when they focus on it, they really don't realize what they're actually doing.
There's
a lot of different things that are going on simultaneously.
And if you're really not aware and you don't understand the whole picture, they're going to get you coming and they're going to get you going.
Indeed.
Dan, anything else?
Well, I had two more questions, if I can get them in. One was, I wondered if you'd uncovered anything to substantiate Admiral Byrd's stories about the Hollow Earth and stuff.
Thank you. That was on my list to ask.
Was it?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that.
You have a list?
Me? Yeah, I'm just not being able to get it in.
Okay. It just seems like it's one of these vague mysteries that it's kind of like Adamski, where it's still a question mark and nobody can prove or disprove it.
For planetary bodies to be hollow is no small surprise. I mean, in terms of cultural empirical science, they've come to the conclusion that a lot of planetary bodies and moons are hollow.
Yeah.
And there's certainly no reason to really, as far as I'm concerned, it is very well the case. And the crust of the Earth is some 700 miles thick.
Yeah.
I mean, and how far has anybody drilled?
Right.
It's relative to the so-called Admiral Byrd diaries that are out there. Those are apparently not, in fact, a true account of what transpired. But I would say that that's a very likely
case. It's part of the structural components of planetary creation and the way planets are created.
But you think his accounts are not totally accurate?
No, I think there was something that was put out in the last couple of years that was reported to be Bird's diaries.
Yeah.
They were just doctored up a little bit, in your opinion?
Well, quite a bit. I mean, mm-hmm. they were put out because somebody desired to make some cash from it.
Yeah.
Really more than anything else.
Yeah.
Do you think anybody got to his wife and that's why she has never spoken out about this one way or the other?
In this moment, I have no knowledge of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was wondering about that. The only other question I have, and this is something that's bothered me for a long time, and that is that now, okay, you made the statement that whatever a person perceives to be real is real, then wouldn't that open the door for any and all charlatans out there who just want to sell a theory like, oh, I'll give you an example now. I don't believe in this Ramtha channeling thing as being valid. Now, it may be, but I don't believe it.
Okay.
But I'll just use that as an example. And you know as well as I do, there's a lot of charlatans out there trying to sell books and stuff.
Okay.
So how do you correlate the two?
Right. How can you say
correlate?
That the guy that published the his own account of Admiral Byrd's records was out to deceive the public, make a buck, or, you know, can you say, gee, that was his special interpretation? You know what I mean? You got to use some discernment here.
Yeah, how do you use discernment if every perception is reality?
Well,
or
again,
someone's reality,
again,
maybe
every,
not yours.
Again, if you perceive something, then you're separate from it. It's only if you become what you perceive, then you can actually know what it is. Relative to Bird diary, I have personally have no evidence within my experience that supports that.
Yeah.
So it's an opinion. Dan, I hope that answered your questions. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate your call.
Okay.
Shane in Seattle, hi. Your turn on 570 KVI with Val Valerian.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Shane.
Hi, Val. I had two groups of questions. I don't know how much time I have. But
better hurry.
Yeah. I want to know basically what the person's personal experience when we shift from the third to the fourth dimension. Will it be a gradual thing, or will it be snap, and will all be changed, or how will that take place on a personal level?
Well, in my experience, having been through such a thing before, it happens in both ways. It begins suddenly, but it takes about 3 days to entirely complete itself.
I had a question. Do different people, like say a certain group of the population, go through it? And then some people go through it slower?
It used to be a situation where some people went through it because they were at a certain resonant frequency and other people did not. Apparently, that's no longer going to be the case because of this particular situation at this timing. So everybody will go through it.
And for the people who go through and the people are still back here, what will it...
There will be no people still back here. Not on this wavelength.
Oh, but what will be here?
Animals, plants, rocks?
There'll be some life forms here. I mean, the rocks will be here, the planet will be here, but there will not be any life in this frequency on this planet.
We'll
all be shifted.
When we're in the fourth dimension...
Everything's shifting in and out all the time. And as this time goes on, you're going to have, and it's plainly in evidence, different dimensional doorways, for lack of a better expression, opening and closing all over the place.
Will the new reality be a physical reality like
yes.
it is here?
Yes.
But
it'll
be
at a different wavelength.
But what will be the right. difference? What will we be able to perceive as a difference if it's a physical reality just like this one?
You will... be able to perceive the difference as being whatever you give thought to manifests itself.
Oh, so we'll have a little more latitude with which to create a reality,
right.
so to speak. Now,
and
we're coming up to
if
the...
If you go there in an area with a lot more latitude and you're very chaotic and of a negative alignment, you're going to actually align yourself with a different frequency after a very short period of time and disappear from that one. So, in a way, it's...
You're going to reap what you're going to sow.
It's self-cleansing.
Uh-huh.
just what about all those people that, as a school.
What about all those people that talk about the Earth changes, you know, and they show the map of Seattle with its underwater? I mean, you could say in a sense, well, maybe that's going to happen after we've already shifted and
they're engaging the drama. They're engaging the drama from a lower state of consciousness. Sure, it's going to happen. But they have to realize that their existence is not, and it never has been, dependent on any structure at all, including a physical body. If they realize who they are, then it does not matter what's going to happen on this frequency.
Oh, I see. No matter what happens here on Earth, you're going to continue to exist in one form or another. So why be so attached to a physical body?
They are choosing to sacrifice
a state of consciousness for trying to protect a body that's just going to die anyway.
Well, the ego loves to engage experience and make drama. And
yeah,
to whatever
drama
degree,
queens, huh?
To whatever degree you want to engage experience and create drama, you can go ahead and do that. I mean, you have free will.
Now, one more thing, Dad. On imprinting, do you believe that to break imprinting, it is necessary through shock forms, such as some of the initiation rites, or can it just be achieved gradually through a... you know, if you look at society, and most people seem to be operating out of a primitive mind state, some other people that have been able to think more advanced.
You can do it either way. I mean, it's easier on the relative to the neurology in your body if you do it the easy way. Mm-hmm. I mean, the soft way, as far as inner technology way. Otherwise, you throw things out of balance a little bit.
In that, you hear about people that maybe were in car crashes, this or that, had head injuries, or some severe shock, and as soon as they get out of the hospital, everything about their life changes. They leave their family, and they go do something that they always wanted to do.
Having access through knowledge of other people's experience, and in knowing that, then that itself lends understanding to your own experience. You don't necessarily have to decide to go and drive into a bridge to have that. You see what I mean?
I know.
You can gain wisdom from other people's experience
mm-hmm.
in just knowing that. So that itself is helpful.
Yeah. I just almost sometimes I wonder if on a mass scale it'd be nice if...
We all drove into a bridge?
Well,
I think that's what the paradigm shift is all about in one sense.
Yes.
In a sense that, but not actually...
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, the grid is already there. As a species, we're moving into unity consciousness, which is what you have to move into, integrate into everything else that's around here. And what you do with the unity consciousness, having free will, is up to you.
Mm-hmm.
David, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back with Val Valerian and your phone calls. I'm Laura Lee on 570 KVI. Kathy in Seattle. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura, and hi, Val.
Hi, Kathy.
Val, did you say that your knowledge of this after the shift landscape was through personal, like a visit through projection?
Through what?
Well, you might say an out-of-body trip, or...
No, I've been through this before in other ways. I've been through a shift before.
Oh, so you're...
That you consciously remember?
Yes.
And so you didn't lose any sort of conscious memory in this term, so you've been sort of awake for a long, long time, in a sense?
Yes.
Would you say it's, so you said if some people didn't... I had my radio down. Yeah, I'm still getting an echo. You said if people didn't really have it together, that they would, like, go into the afterwards, and then pretty soon they'd disappear into another plane. It sounds almost like when you're recording on magnetic tape, you kind of flux it first, and then you apply the new signal. Is that a good metaphor? That people could go into one of a number of planes, if you will.
Well, like attracts like. I mean, you're basically... resonate to a certain frequency and you're mm-hmm. there. In this case, everybody's being pushed, as it were, and where they stay there by how they are as in terms of being.
remains to be seen. If they don't stay there, they go to a resonant frequency that relates to how they are.
So everybody's finding their own comfort zone, in effect, and so
essentially,
So that instead of there being, we're moving from here to there. There's almost an infinite amount of parallel realities that they choose from.
Of course.
You're saying like finds like in a sense too. Okay.
Well, when you speak of it as if it's one shift, you're thinking that like most people are the more enlightened or something.
No, everyone.
So everybody's going to go.
Everybody's going this time.
Not necessarily to the same place, though.
Now, you say this time, that means that there were other times when there were only certain beings that made the shift? And was it just here on Earth, or was it in the solar system? Was it universal?
It's been elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So Earth isn't the only locale of this?
No.
I don't think so.
A lot of people are sort of a mixed bag of, like, non-integrated collections of beliefs.
Thank you very much.
Which, nothing personal here, which one would dictate the end location? Like the most powerful one or the most imprint level one?
Well, whatever beliefs, structures the way you are, the way you are as a being, okay, which also structures what you do. Now, if you live in a state of fear all the time and when thrust into the unknown, see, the whole thing, everything involves making known something that's unknown, okay? And that involves consciousness, and it involves you as an individual. Nothing worth doing, if you look back on your whole life here, nothing worth doing, you'll recall, involves something that was known. It always involves something that was unknown. And it pushed you into a situation, one way or another, upon retrospect, in which you evolved an understanding about something, hasn't it? This is no different.
So that the new change, you might say, is one more piece in a pattern which has been recreating all along.
All it is change. That's all there is.
And then once we live on that level for a while, then we're going to make a shift to the next one.
Right. And if you're a slave to the cultural programming of resistance to change, for lack of no other reference point, because it's been programmed to be so, then you resist every change in your life. And think of things in general terms, in retrospect, if you must view the past in that way. And reflect on that. Contemplate that.
We also see it as if you're in the ocean riding out a big wave, you might as well be surfing at the crest of the wave, you know, and getting a good view, than being pummeled by the wave at the bottom. You know, you've got a choice where you want to be within the wave pattern.
Right, it's simply a different view.
Yeah.
Unless you're a captain.
One's a hell of a lot more fun than the other.
It depends on what you prefer.
Ah. Some people would like the tunnel and have their pictures published everywhere.
I guess that's true, because a lot of people, I mean, I know a few drama queens out there that can't live through the day unless they invent some big, heavy drama in which to play out and be the star of it in their own little soap opera. I mean, I've met people like this, and it's like you shake your head and you go, well, it's just not my story.
Well,
line here.
They're growing, you know, they're growing in understanding, and that's fine.
So even though you've been talking about this major shift, from your latest description, it sounds like really not that much more of a change.
You've been through one, you've been through them all, right?
Well, in essence, it's going to be something that's very enjoyable in the final aspect of it, yes.
Oh, you mean after this 2023?
The only thing that makes me sad, though, is the thought that this is a beautiful three-dimensional Earth. You know, it's such a jewel.
All of this is already there. It's sitting there. It's there already.
Okay.
It's sitting there, ready.
Is your Matrix 3 book available in most bookstores?
Well, in Seattle, it's available at a couple bookstores. I don't recall. Reflections, I think, is one of them, and East West.
Oh, you were telling me East West.
East West
is another.
So is another one.
That's good to know.
And East-West is on Roosevelt and 63rd or something like that. Kathy, thanks for the call.
Thank you, guys.
Shane in Seattle, boy. Did you have to go to the back of the line when we didn't quite get you on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was there.
Welcome back.
Talking and you couldn't hear me.
Oh. Okay. Well, could you speak up a little bit?
Well, you're in the front of the line if everybody else reverses themselves.
Okay. My other question to the one I had first was, you're talking about all the... I basically want to know who are the forces behind, all the manipulation. I mean, is it a government? Is it an alien race? I mean, give me an idea of who or what and what their motivation is with all this.
Well, it's a multi-nested hierarchy of control. The ultimate, if you must look at in polarities, the ultimate negative polarity is just totally aligned with aggrandizement of the ego in human terms. There are, this gone into very well by Michael Topper.
What's the name of his book again?
It's in Matrix 3.
Oh, his material. He wrote an article and it's in Matrix 3.
Yes.
Okay.
He goes into that very much, but in a nutshell, you have different factions aligned in the negative polarity, and some of these factions are at different frequency or at different wavelengths, and partially they're desirous for control and manipulation to the degree to which they lack the spiritual component overlap with other factions. Processes of manipulation and control. So you have a multi-nested hierarchy.
So there's like a confederation of those that are working against life force and
they're
a confederation
not,
of those that are working
so
with
much,
it?
They're not so much working against one as they're working for the other.
For how would you describe for what? For control, for manipulation?
For control and manipulation. That's why some species enjoy the idea of stalking. You know, there's different...
What do you mean stalking?
Stalking.
S-T-O-C-K or S-T-A-L-K?
A-L-K.
Okay.
Some mental formats and cultural formats of some species are really, really different.
Like what? Like, give an example.
In the idea of stalking, perhaps, is a good example. Just for the enjoyment of stalking another species.
The hunt, right?
The hunt.
As sport.
Essentially, from a different perspective. Just for the sake of doing it, not necessarily for any particular end object in it other than itself.
Mm-hmm. But feeling the predator is feeling powerful over the prey, that kind of a hit. Okay.
Yes. It's that partially is because they themselves are working in their lower brain structures. It's a modification. It's a negative orientation relative to the herd mentality.
Okay.
The hierarchy, you see. They're working in their lower brain structures, too. They may be totally logically minded, left-brained in orientation, and have no emotional component of compassion and empathy that functions in their society. And there are many societies like that that are just totally logical. And they're just all intellect. And,
Say our own society is veering towards that we praise the intellect above all else.
It all comes from the integration of that specific species from Mars.
I see.
A long time ago. That's when otherwise this whole planet would have developed on a female right-brained and eventually...
Well, if it was a whole long time ago, how come we had for so long, up to about 6,000 years ago, a very agricultural, mother, goddess, female-type society, agrarian societies? But the Mars thing came in a long time ago, but yet we've had this female-dominant...
Because the civilization evolved to the point where you had a different mode, specifically the industrial type situation, which was patriarchic controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically that format took over, because that was involved with a major expression and manifestation on this level of the power control mode.
And was it just manifesting, as we can document in our archaeological record, 6,000 years ago, or was it much earlier? Or did it go intervals? Did it flip-flop?
There have been many different civilizations on this planet.
Right.
It's manifested itself many times.
Many times. That makes more sense, yeah. Shane, one last question do you have, or I'm going to move on?
I just had one to ask one reassurance. So no matter what any species or government does, they have no power of affecting the
outcome.
The shift?
No.
That they're totally powerless no matter what they think?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Hey,
thanks.
Best news I've heard this decade.
Yeah.
It's Jim in Seattle. Thanks, Shane. Jim in Seattle. Hi, thanks for joining us. You're on 570 KVI with Val Valerian.
Good morning. I only have one simple question. How does he relate to, or how is he related to his creator?
How am I related?
Yeah, in what manner do you, it's like, are you the same as he, or are you trying to reach?
Are you a devoted Christian, and you're asking from that point of view, Jim?
No, it's just a matter of, it's like, everyone has to be created from something, and so is he trying to reach the same level?
I have always existed.
Okay, so you were never created.
I have always existed, and so have you.
Okay,
it just depends on whether you have a body conscious orientation and you have a separation in that mode. There are many different modes of dualism present in the consciousness on a cultural level. It depends on from what area you're speaking. But to answer your question, the creator is part of what I am.
I hope that answers it, Jim.
Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate that. What's the end result? So we go through, the universe, is it continually evolving on some sense,
yes,
so that we're continually, it's always going farther out in front of us than we get there, so it's just one long, big, happy journey. One long, interesting journey.
Interesting. Yes.
We have about 10 minutes left, and I thought I would just hand it over to you and say there must be something that you want to bring up or some story you want to tell us or share with us.
Something I'd like to bring up. There's always so much. There's so many different things to discuss on so many levels. I think that for those of you who have been listening tonight or this morning, that all this has given you a lot of food for thought, and that you realize that there's a lot more to what's been going on that you may have thought, and that this may have confirmed your suspicions about some of the things that are going on, and that hopefully this conversation this morning has kind of broadened your horizons to where you're stopping and contemplating really who you are and what your particular universe is, as it were, is about, and what your existence is about. And there's a lot more there to it. The final word, I think I really have to say, that love is the answer, and not any flower child 60s cultural format in which I say that, but literally as a reality and as a major way to focus consciousness to accomplish anything. That is the major factor. That's really what I could say to really cap that off. Dream than a dream.
You get that sense, don't you? Like, it's not quite, the resolution is off or something on this side.
Well,
it's not quite laid down. It's like a color print that's off, a degree or something.
Well, people in their own way suspect that everything is off, but they can't quite put their finger on it because they don't have the reference points. And this is one reason why we are doing this show, and one reason why you do what you do, and you do it well, is because it does put that out there to people who are becoming more and more predisposed to change and wake up and become more conscious.
I guess so, because I can't believe I'm getting away with this.
There you go with beliefs again.
Well, I don't actually believe that. I'm just saying it facetiously.
Well, it's not really a matter
actually,
of getting away
weird.
With anything. This is the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because truth is truth, basic truth, as far as easily recognizable within people. I mean, the functions of consciousness and mass and energy and light and sound and everything else are basic to everything. And the people that, you know, there are factions within the apparent controlling areas in this culture that understand a lot of this, and they don't particularly agree with the things that are going on now. I mean, in certain terms, all the cultural stuff about all the election stuff and all that is becoming very transparent to people, but they don't quite know what to do about it. You know, I mean, who do
right.
you vote for?
It's obvious we're being manipulated, but then...
Yeah, and again, to vote is to say, yes, govern me, you know? And there's no provision in the cultural setting for a situation where people start becoming responsible and autonomous.
So do it on your own. Become
yes.
responsible and autonomous
and
on your own.
And gradually when people begin to abandon the political format in favor of spiritual maturity, all of this other stuff will fade. But of course there's a limited amount of time on a linear level for this to occur because it's, you know, there's going to be a major shift here. So get it together.
Actually, if you're truly independent and autonomous, you don't need a government to hand you the system. You don't need a school system to hand you the means by which to waken up. You'll go out and find them.
Other
and
cultures.
You'll seek them.
There are other planets.
You run
other
into
cultures
them. You recognize them. You use them.
You know, other cultures do things very differently than this one. This is in terms of perspective of other cultures that I'm familiar with. This place is a horrendously beautiful, which seems sort of contradictory, but horrendously beautiful learning experience.
Hey, being human is a hot ticket to hold these days, I guess, huh?
I think so.
We're going to go to the telephones. David in Seattle. David in West Seattle.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for joining us.
Hi. I could listen to this all night.
Yeah, me too.
Me too.
Way back when, your depiction of the mattress springs as negative energy antennas, it makes me love my futon that much more.
Yes.
I thought of that too. Wood and cotton, you can't go wrong with it.
No, nothing synthetic. Val, I agree with what you said earlier about belief. I believe in nothing but myself. And once you accept an idea or model as real without experiential validation, you're shutting yourself off from other possibly better models. And I would indict religion and the public education system of creating so many unquestioning automatons in this world.
Well, it's also creating the revolution in consciousness, so it can't be all bad. It's necessary. Like we said, what we perceive to be positive and negative are simply timing factors. The timing is always perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, you know, a few hundred years ago, we would all be tortured and burned as heretics for thinking and speaking
about
this thing.
Well, you know, actually, what I guess, Val, what I'm hearing you say is something that I guess I came to a conclusion not too long ago, and that was, hey, I'm determined to enjoy my life, and I don't have to get angry at all the nonsense that I see around me because, in a sense, it's just all meant to be, and here I chose to be here, and I'm here to learn these lessons, and might as well make a fun game out of it rather than torture out of it.
There are several ways. Yes, that's true, but there are several ways in which people apparently perceive this train of thought, and one of those ways was expressed to me this evening at the expo.
Mm-hmm.
When I was asked to come up there and talk about mind control, I decided, well, here is this disaster preparedness expo, and everybody's functioning, all the speakers are functioning in the first three brain areas. Why do I have to add to the fear of the people? So I start talking about something else relative to all this, pointing out some details of it. And some gentleman said to somebody else there, in reference to me, that he viewed me as being dangerous because I was ignoring all the other things that were going on. He obviously missed the point. But people may interpret, once you've already addressed the cultural arena, if you move on in consciousness, people who are stuck in the cultural arena would interpret that as burying your head in the sand because they themselves don't understand what's going on higher levels. And because consciousness is the name of the game, not politics.
The apocalyptic mindset there.
Yes, and that's okay, because they're making an evolutionary step. They're not wrong for doing that any more than anybody who uses a religion for as a tool in growth to understand their own potential as part of the Creator is wrong. It's not. They're all correct. It's all a continuum of expansion and evolution.
You were talking about giving up power by accepting the need of external replacement, and one way I have taken back my ability to control my own destiny is in the actualization of myself as healthy from a state of degenerative disease. I was diagnosed at a fairly young age with a form of arthritis in my back and legs that left me often immobile. And after several years of, I guess, accepting my position as a slave to the medical establishment and their poisons, I affected, mind control over the disease or the perception of it and eliminated that condition from my body.
How long did it take you?
I can't really say a time. It didn't really take an extended period of time. Once I denied the fact that I was going to be a slave to this anymore, and once I gave up all the medicine and the belief in the doctor's ability to cure me, which basically they said there wasn't any.
That's why they call it the practice of medicine.
Yeah, by blocking
only practice isn't making perfect, is it?
Yeah, and I went from a state of just horrible pain to a perfect healthiness.
I've done that with colds. I haven't quite got to the degree of a major disease, but I've done it with colds. I don't have time for this, and it goes away instantly.
Mm-hmm. You just deny the fact that you're going to let it be a slave to you. One more thing. All the external noise you're talking about in the form of biological electronic manipulation, keeping us from achieving our ultimate potential, would I be wise to follow what has been a long-time intuition to leave this technologically polluted society behind and move to a more pure place in the world?
You don't have to do that. You're going to do that anyway. Just to learn and gain wisdom from the experience you currently are doing. That's why you're here.
Uh-huh.
Just
what about all those
consider
people
it
that,
as a school.
What about all those people that talk about the earth changes, you know, and they show the map of Seattle with its underwater? I mean, you could say in a sense, well, maybe that's going to happen after we've already shifted and
they're engaging
left.
The drama. They're engaging the drama from a lower state of consciousness. Sure, it's going to happen. But they have to realize that their existence is not, and it never has been, dependent on any structure at all, including a physical body. If they realize who they are, then it does not matter what's going to happen on this frequency.
Oh, I see. No matter what happens here on Earth, you're going to continue to exist in one form or another. So why be so attached to physical body,
right, they are choosing to
sacrificing a state of consciousness for trying to protect a body that's just going to die anyway.
Well, the ego loves to engage experience and make drama, and to whatever degree you want to engage experience and create drama, you can go ahead and do that. I mean, you have free will.
Now, one more thing, Dad, on imprinting. Do you believe that to break imprinting, it is necessary through shock forms, such as some of the initiation rites, or can I just be achieved gradually through if you look at society, and most people seem to be operating out of a primitive mind state, some other people that have been able to think more advanced.
Well, you can do it either way. I mean, it's easier on the relative to the neurology in your body if you do it the easy way, I mean the soft way, as far as inner technology way. Otherwise, you throw things out of balance a little bit.
In that, you hear about people that maybe were in car crashes, this or that, had head injuries, or some severe shock, and as soon as they get out of the hospital, everything about their life changes. They leave their family, and they go do something that they always wanted to do.
Having access through knowledge of other people's experience, and in knowing that, then that itself lends understanding to your own experience. You don't necessarily have to decide to go and drive into a bridge to have that. You see what I mean?
I know.
You can gain wisdom from other people's experience in just knowing that. So that itself is helpful.
Yeah. I just almost sometimes I wonder if on a mass scale it'd be nice if
we all drove into a bridge.
Well,
I think that's what the paradigm shift is all about in one sense.
Yes. In a sense, but not actually.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. I mean, the grid is already there. As a species, we're moving into unity consciousness, which is what you have to move into, integrate into everything else that's around here. And what you do with the unity consciousness, having free will, is up to you.
Mm-hmm. David, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back with Val Valerian and your phone calls. I'm Laura Lee on 570 KVI.
This gone into very well by Michael Topper.
What's the name of his book again?
It's in Matrix 3.
Oh, his material. He wrote an article, and it's in Matrix 3.
Yes.
Okay.
He goes into that very much, but in a nutshell, you have different factions aligned in the negative polarity, and some of these factions are at different frequency or at different wavelengths, and partially they're desirous for control and manipulation to the degree to which they lack the spiritual component overlap with other factions. Processes of manipulation and control. So you have a multi-nested hierarchy.
So there's like a confederation of those that are working against life force and
they're
a confederation
not,
of those that are working
so
with
much,
it?
They're not so much working against one as they're working for the other.
For how would you describe for what? For control, for manipulation?
For control and manipulation. That's why mm-hmm. some species enjoy the idea of stalking. You know, there's different...
What do you mean stalking?
Stalking.
S-T-O-C-K or S-T-A-L-K?
A-L-K.
Okay.
You know, a different... some mental formats and cultural formats of some species are really, really different.
Like what? Like, give an example.
Well, in the idea of stalking, perhaps, is a good example. Just for the enjoyment of stalking another species.
The hunt, right?
The hunt.
As sport.
Essentially, from a different perspective. Just for the sake of doing it, not necessarily for any particular end object in it other than itself.
Mm-hmm. But feeling the predator is feeling powerful over the prey, that kind of a hit. Okay.
Yes. It's that partially is because they themselves are working in their lower brain structures. It's a modification. It's a negative orientation relative to the herd mentality.
Ah.
The hierarchy, you see. They're working in their lower brain structures, too. They may be totally logically minded, left-brained in orientation, and have no emotional component of compassion and empathy.
Mm-hmm.
That functions in their society, and there are many societies like that that are just totally logical, and they're just all intellect. And you know,
we could say our own society is veering towards that we praise the intellect above all else,
it all comes from the integration of that specific species from Mars.
I see.
A long time ago. That's when otherwise this whole planet would have developed on a female right-brained, and eventually...
If it was a whole long time ago, how come we had for so long, up to about 6,000 years ago, a very agricultural, mother, goddess, female-type society, agrarian societies? But the Mars thing came in a long time ago, but yet we've had this female-dominant...
Because the civilization evolved to the point where you had... a different mode, specifically the industrial type situation, which was patriarchic controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So that format took over because that was involved with a major expression and manifestation on this level of the power control mode.
And was it just manifesting, as we can document in our archaeological record, 6,000 years ago, or was it much earlier? Or did it go intervals? Did it flip-flop?
There have been many different civilizations on this planet.
Right.
It's manifested itself many times.
Many times. That makes more sense, yeah. Shane, one last question do you have, or I'm going to move on?
I just had wanted to ask one reassurance. So no matter what any species or government does, they have no power of affecting the
outcome.
The shift?
No.
That they're totally powerless no matter what they think?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Hey, thanks. Best news I've heard this decade.
Yeah.
Jim in Seattle. Thanks, Shane. Jim in Seattle. Hi, thanks for joining us. You're on 570 KVI with Val Valerian.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I only have one simple question. How does he relate to, or how is he related to his creator?
How am I related?
Yeah, in what manner do you, it's like, are you the same as he, or are you trying to reach?
Are you a devoted Christian, and you're asking from that point of view, Jim?
No. It's just okay. A matter of, like, everyone has to be created from something, and so is he going to? Is he trying to reach the same level?
I have always existed.
Okay, so you were never created.
I have always existed. And so have you.
Okay.
It just depends on whether you have a body conscious orientation and you have a separation in that mode. There are many different modes of dualism present in the consciousness on a cultural level. It depends on from what area you're speaking. But to answer your question, you know, the creator is part of what I am.
I hope that answers it, Jim.
Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate that. What's the end result? So we go through, the universe, is it continually evolving on some sense,
yes,
so that we're continually, it's always going farther out in front of us than we get there, so it's just one long, big, happy journey. One long, interesting journey.
Interesting. Yes.
We have about 10 minutes left, and I thought I would just hand it over to you and say there must be something that you want to bring up or some story you want to tell us or share with us.
Something I'd like to bring up. There's always so much. There's so many different things to discuss on so many levels. I think that for those of you who have been listening tonight or this morning, that all this has given you a lot of food for thought, and that you realize that there's a lot more to what's been going on that you may have thought, and that this may have confirmed your suspicions about some of the things that are going on, and that hopefully this conversation this morning has kind of broadened your horizons to where you're stopping and contemplating really who you are and what your particular universe is, as it were, is about, and what your existence is about. And there's a lot more there to it. The final word, I think I really have to say, that love is the answer, and not any flower child 60s cultural format in which I say that, but literally as a reality and as a major way to focus consciousness to accomplish anything. That is the major factor. That's really what I could say to really cap that off.